Good evening, everybody. We are here on another beautiful Wednesday night, a cold but beautiful Wednesday night. We are the Tri-State Sports Guys. I am your host, Dan Santarella, here with my dapper, dashing buddy, Tony D, behind the glass.
Yeah.
We have no Neil tonight. He's busy building his Hall of Fame comedy career. And Mike D is telling me he's at a work dinner. But I have to be honest with you, Tony. I think there's a really good chance he's signing autographs somewhere. He is exceptionally famous.
We can't all be that.
Yeah, he's a good dude. But it's going to be a little different show tonight. Mike Bo's not going to be here. He's going to be a little late. So first thing I want to do, Tone, is congratulate you on your Buffalo Bills victory. I think they played the Jets.
Yeah, I think that might have been a really play.
Yeah, it was never really close, but, you know, that's how that goes. We would get into a little bit of Giants talk, but Mike Bo said he wanted to wait for later to get into Giants and Jets and all that. So we're just going to start out tonight a little differently than we normally do. And we're going to get into a little college football talk. I wrote an article last week. We get a few comments on it, mainly from the same handful of guys. But, you know, I take some heat for some different things that I say. But I find it interesting that I'll write an article, and then the same points I make are thrown back in my face as though I didn't just make them. But that being said, I posted an article saying that it's clear now at this point that Alabama and Florida State are the cream of the crop with the BCS. They're going to have to lose, obviously, one of them. They both have cupcakes this week, Florida State with Idaho, Alabama with Chattanooga the following week. They have the Iron Bowl, Auburn-Bama, Florida State and Florida in Gainesville, followed by the conference championship games. I don't see either way either team loses this week. And I've said before, I think Florida State steamrolls Florida the following week. And I think Bama could be in for a little bit of a tester against Gus Malzahn's Auburn Tigers. But I wanted to really focus on Ohio State, Baylor, moving on down the line with some of those teams. Oregon now, that seems to be back in the hunt a little bit after Stanford's mind-blowing loss to Ed Orgeron's USC Trojans. Tony, did you see any of that game, by the way?
I missed it.
Yeah, you missed it? Well, you and about half the country missed that game. It was just a stink fest, but it was just interesting to me that everyone trashed Oregon the week before. Everybody knew, right? Everybody knew Oregon stunk. Then the minute Stanford loses to USC, everybody tells you how bad Stanford is. So my deal with Ohio State that I have said is they don't play anyone. I mean, you look at them playing Indiana this week, okay. They're laying like 35 points. Indiana stinks. Indiana couldn't beat a lot of high school teams in Texas. That's how bad Indiana is. Then they have Michigan the following week that has done them no favors this year by just laying stinker after stinker, and you wonder what Brady Hoke's job security is up there. It's just a terrible program right at this minute. I don't think there's any way Urban Meyer's team can do anything to play themselves into anything without catching a loss from somebody up at the top two. But the team that I am big on, and Tony D knows this, Mike Bo knows it, Neil doesn't read any of my articles, but Neil follows college football, so he knows it, the Baylor Bears, Art Briles' team, that's a team this week that is the marquee game of the week. Everybody else is playing some kind of clown team from somewhere, and Art Briles' Bears are heading up to Stillwater, Oklahoma, take on Mike Gundy's Oklahoma State's Cowboys, almost said Sooners. That's a game that I have said I think Baylor absolutely fires through that game. I saw that they're only 8.5-point favorites. I think it's a lock. I know Oklahoma State has a pretty decent defense, but they don't really play anybody either. The whole league kind of stinks. And I think that Baylor is the one team on the outside that could possibly make a move. Are they going to need a loss? Yeah, it certainly seems that way from Bama or Florida State. But I think when you look at Baylor with Oklahoma State, an underrated TCU team, they've had some struggles this year, but Gary Patterson's a good coach. And then they have a matchup with the Longhorns at the end of the year. There's no Big 12 championship game. I think Baylor's a team that could get right on that cusp if they go undefeated, where they'd be heartbroken. But I mentioned last week to Mike that both Bama and Florida State, if they're going to go undefeated, both have to go 13-0, and that's something Baylor does not have to do. Baylor only has to play 12 games. So, I mean, a few weeks ago I looked at it as though Baylor would struggle a little bit with Oklahoma. I thought maybe they win by 2 touchdowns. They won 41-12. So they've kind of steamrolled everybody they've played. They just put up point after point after point, and it never seems to stop. Tony D's having a little issue with his beer over here. We don't know exactly what's going on.
The beer's not going down the sink.
Yeah, I'm supposed to stay focused on Big 12 football in Connecticut while Tony D's having a beer malfunction over here. Yeah, so, I mean, a few weeks ago I did mention on the show that I thought Baylor, which was 7-0 at the time, had five games left to play, that they could struggle with Oklahoma or with Texas Tech, and both of those ended up being blowouts. And now they're down to the final three games that they have. And this week here with the OK State Cowboys seems to be the only real landmine in their way. TCU is way down this year, as down as I've seen them since, like, pre-LaDainian Tomlinson days, so you're talking a long time. Mack Brown's Texas team is just a nightmare. I mean, you have no idea what is going on in Austin. The program's in disarray. Mack Brown doesn't seem to have any control of his team, kind of like Tony D with the beer right now. He's got no control over what's going on over there. He's got a lot of head on it. I know that much. But, yeah, I mean, I do think that I mentioned how Bama and Florida State are head and shoulders above everyone right now. I mean, Oregon's loss to Stanford really cemented them just plummeting down, and now they're in a situation sitting there at fifth in the BCS where you go, well, you know, what the hell could they do? I mean, what kind of break could they catch, or what could they kind of break could they make for themselves? I don't see it either way. So I would really have to bet on Bama and FSU just winning out. Like I said, I think Bama's going to have a tougher time with Auburn than anybody gives them credit for. Gus Malzahn's team, if you watch any of that Georgia game this weekend, it's one of the best college football games, one of the best sporting events I've ever watched. First half, Auburn looked unstoppable. Second half, Mark Richt looked like he did something with the water, and his team came out fired up. Then they get that 70-some-odd-yard fourth and forever play, the tip pass that goes right into the Auburn kids' hands. And everybody made it about how great Auburn was. And I think credit was due to Georgia for fighting back. I mean, that's a team that's not playing for an SEC East title. I mean, you know, they just kept fighting and fighting and fighting to get back into that football game. And the other flip side of that was I thought Auburn's team really deserved a lot of credit. I mean, they looked like they couldn't lose. Then they looked like they couldn't win. And everybody wants to talk about the gimmicky offense. Everybody wants to talk about the bend but don't break defense and all that. And what I mentioned in one of my articles was it was a real testament to the intestinal fortitude for the Auburn Tigers. I mean, this is a team, okay, they run an up-tempo offense, spread offense, they do a lot of different things. Their quarterback is athletic. They got some good backs, some good wideouts. They blocked Georgia pretty well all game. And I just thought that instead of talking about the gimmicky spread offense or the defense that gave up some big chunks of yards, especially in the second half of the football game, I thought the real credit was due to how hard those kids fought. I mean, they never quit in a game where they easily could have. They just kept scrapping and fighting their way back into the football game. So I think, you know, they have a bye this week. They get ready for, like I said, the Iron Bowl next week. And I think they'll be ready. I think Malzahn will have some plays for that Saban, the Kirby Smart defense. But really, other than that, to look forward to things, really, it's just the Baylor-Oklahoma State game. Every other game this week, with the exception of if you're a huge Pac-12 fan, I mean, Oregon's playing Arizona. They're laying 22 or 3. I don't see any way Oregon doesn't blow them out of the water. So I would be focusing this week, for anybody out there looking for television viewing advice, on the Baylor-Oklahoma State game. I think it's a night game on might be Fox. And I think you'll see a lot of points put up. But like I said, I just think Art Briles team laying the 8.5. They pull away late. I think they put up 50. I don't see there's any question, maybe a 50-30 type game. And I think in a week devoid of anything worth getting excited about, unless maybe you like bad football and you want to watch Notre Dame and BYU, I would be tuning into that Baylor game. They're exciting to watch if you haven't seen them play. Oklahoma State's a good team. They lost a stinker to West Virginia early on in the year where everybody kind of counted them out. But that's a good football team there, and I would pay attention to that one. Now, Tony D and I discussed before the show, where are we going to go after college football? You know, we got some callers today. We got some people that might be calling in to talk about some very, very big things close to my heart. What I just want to mention, because Tony and I were talking about it before the show, is what a geek. Just a nice non sequitur segue, Tony. What a geek Alex Rodriguez is. Okay? Just a little, I mean, we go from talking Baylor, Oklahoma State, to Alex Rodriguez. Now, the guy's a complete and utter bomb. Mm-hmm. There's no question about that. And we're going to get into a lot more of that later. You know what I mean? We're going to have a big, long discussion about that. But right now, we're going to go to the Tucci Lumber Hotline. And we're going to talk to the KU, that's Kansas basketball, for anybody out there that's not a huge Jayhawk fan, KU radio color commentator, Greg Gurley. Greg, are you with us?
I'm here.
Greg, it's an honor to have you, man. I am a huge Kansas fan since I was a kid. Picked it up from my dad, who was a huge Wilt Chamberlain, JoJo White fan. I follow him. I've missed maybe 10 games in about 25 years. Talk to me a little bit about what you've seen so far this year. I've caught all three of the D1 games that they've played. Talk to me a little bit about what you've seen with the team this year. How are they looking to you?
Well, I think as a KU fan, you know that the expectations are crazy. I mean, Bill said it several times throughout the last few weeks that what other place in America where you win 31 games, you lose all five starters, bring six freshmen in, and people think you should be better, other than Kansas, Duke, you know, some of the other blue bloods. And so that's exactly what we've got. I think we've got better with freshmen, I mean, which is crazy. It's a great freshman class. And, you know, I'm from the era of the Fab Five, where that was the greatest recruiting class ever. There might be two classes this year that are better than the Fab Five. One, I think, is Kentucky, and number two might be Kansas when it's all said and done, because it's just there's talent everywhere, the athleticism, everything about them is just great. So that being said, understanding that it is a very young team, and I don't want to ever use that as an excuse, but you just don't know what we've got until they really get under the bright lights. And Tuesday night in Chicago, we discovered what we've got. We got some tough kids that still don't know what they're doing, but they were good enough to beat a great program like Duke. You know, the whole world was watching, and it was a great opportunity for them to grow up. So my expectations are huge, because I know that there's two guys at every position. There's guys on this bench that won't see very much time that would start at a lot of other programs. So Bill has created a monster, and it's fun to be a part of.
Yeah, Greg, to stay on that Duke game for a second, I obviously watched it, as I know you did. How much do you think the new rules changes now with all the tight calls and the hand-checking and everything? How much do you think that affected Duke in that game? Because I don't know if you're of the mind that I am, which is that Duke seems to get a lot more calls than a lot of other teams. And it just seemed to me like it made a real discernible difference, especially down the stretch in that game when KU went on the 17-6 run to end the game. How much do you think it was the officiating, or how much do you think KU just outright earned it at the end of that game?
Well, I think, you know, I'll toe the line and say that I thought it was – I don't like the rule, number one. I don't understand why they did it, because I don't think college basketball – I understand that it was physical. It's way more physical than when I played. I understand the wanting to clean up some things, but I think they've gone too far. I think they've taken – they're going the polar opposite right now. They're not – there's no baby step in this thing. It went from really physical to call everything. And then in the same breath, they're calling stuff off the ball. They're calling things that don't have an effect on the play. Teams don't lose possession of the ball and they call the foul. It makes for a 2-hour and 20-minute game. Our first game of the year against Louisiana Monroe, there were 58 fouls called and shot 72 free throws. It was crazy. It was almost 2.5 hours long. So in that particular game, I think both teams who like, you know, you don't ever see Duke play zone, you don't ever see Kansas play zone. It was man-to-man. And both ways, I thought there were calls that they could have let go. I mean, smart teams like Kansas and Duke understand that they're going to call it, so they just dribble to the basket. And if you touch them, you go to the line. I think Kansas took advantage of it, and I think Duke took advantage of it. But it's not, to me, it's not great basketball. It kills the flow. It kills the rhythm. Very rarely do you get more than two or three times up and down the court without a whistle blowing. It just, I think you can tell by the tone of my voice, I don't like it.
Yeah, and you know what, Greg, I got to agree with you 100%. I have noticed in the handful of college games I've watched so far this year that the games are, you know, a lot longer. Everything, every little ticky-tack thing is called. Do you think that's something that, you know, in your talks with Coach Self, do you think that's something that, that they're talking a lot about, or do you think it's just something where he tells his guys to just stay aggressive and, you know, they're going to call what they're going to call, or they're making huge strides to try to change the way they defend? Because I noticed the defenses looked, you know, a lot different this year. That's a lot of youth, I'm sure, but a lot has to do with the rule changes. Is there something they're talking about a lot in Lawrence?
No, I mean, I haven't noticed it. I go to practice just about every day. I haven't seen Bill coach any differently than he has in the past. But I think there's a whole other issue with our team because we're just – right now we're just young and dumb and we don't really know how to play defense. And that's that was amazing with what we did against Duke because we actually played pretty good defense. And last night we played Iona, a really good Iona team came in here and really stuck with us because our ability to keep guys in front of us right now isn't very good. That's partly due to young guys just not buying in yet, and part of it has to do with the rule. But I don't see coaches coaching any different. What they're really hoping, in my opinion, is to think that the officials are going to, you know, right now on the top of their head is this rule. That's all they're thinking about. So they almost overdo it by calling everything, which – I hope there's probably 8 to 10 fouls a game that you could not call. Give a warning. If it does, if you don't lose possession, do it like when in the NBA you watch and they throw a shot up on the glass, probably got fouled. If it goes in, they don't call anything. If it doesn't go in, they call the foul and it's a late whistle. I'd rather hear a late whistle than a bad whistle. And hopefully these officials, I mean, it's their livelihood, you know. They know that if they don't call it right, they're going to lose games. So to a degree, it's unfair to them. But there's got to be a happy medium. There's no way they can just go from what it was to what they're trying to do this year. It's just too big of a stretch.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%, Greg. Look, I'm going to get away from the officiating for a minute because it clearly the way they're calling it out irritates both of us. I wanted to talk to you about something I said on our show here a few weeks ago. My co-host asked me, all about Andrew Wiggins, you know, and I hadn't seen him play yet. And I made the comment at the time that I really felt, as a diehard fan, that the two most important players coming into the year were Perry Ellis and Nadir Tharpe, because I felt like, obviously, Tharpe's a junior, Ellis is a sophomore, played well at the end of last year. Was that something you thought coming into the year, and is it something you think now? You know, Ellis has played unbelievably, I've thought. Tharpe still makes some of those kind of rookie mistakes at times. Were those guys you were looking at coming this year, or was it all the Andrew Wiggins story for you?
Well, you're obviously a Kansas basketball fan because you hit it nail on the head. I mean, Perry Ellis was a four-time player of the year in the state of Kansas, four-time state champion, and he's a stud. But nobody really knows much about him because he averaged 5.8 points a game last year. He's a leading returning scorer at 5.8. You know, so it's not like that. It's just wowing everyone, and they kind of forgot that he was a McDonald's All-American. He's a big deal. But the problem with Perry, it's not really a problem, he's the most unemotional guy ever. Like, he just constantly has the same look on his face, even when he scores 24 points against Duke. If you get a smile out of him, you're doing something. But I totally agree that he's the most important guy on this team because he's not a guy that leads – like a rah-rah guy, but the way he operates, his footwork, his ability to score, I think Perry's going to benefit more than anybody on this rule change because when he gets the ball, he's always aggressive going to the basket. And right now, if you're aggressive with the ball, you're going to shoot 10 free throws a game. Perry's a good free throw shooter. He's going to score 20 points with his eyes closed. And so Perry, you're right. He's the most important player on this team. And Nadir, along with Frank Mason, who really grew up last Tuesday in Chicago, he's a huge part of it as well. Because last year, again, as a Kansas fan, you understand that we struggled at the point guard position, and it wasn't necessarily Elijah Johnson's fault. He was a two guard for 3 years. We asked him to be a point guard, and he made the sacrifices, but he's not a true point guard. And so having the deer get the reins to the offense and then having Frank behind him really solidified. You know, Bill Self loves his point guards. I mean, you go through his coaching career, you know, he's had, you know, from Darren Williams to Tyshawn Taylor, Sherron Collins, Mario Chalmers. Point guards, very crucial part of the Bill Self offense, and we didn't really have that, and still won 31 games, and got upset late in that Michigan game. And I think if we would have been just the right bounce, that's another Final Four for Bill Self. So point guard so big, and Perry Ellis is as well.
Yeah, and my thought was with Ellis was I could not see another interior scorer on the team this year. You know, I couldn't see Jamari Traylor, and I didn't know enough about Embiid. But watching last night's game against a local team for us here, Iona, a pretty good team, a high-scoring team, he was impressive as hell last night. I mean, I couldn't believe some of the more advanced moves, his knowledge of when to cut to the hoop for that alley-oop and all those things. Is this a guy now that we can – Not look to score maybe, 14 and 10 or whatever it was exactly last night, but can we look to this guy to be that secondary interior scorer that Traylor and Black don't look like they're going to be?
I mean, we've been drooling over Joel Embiid since he set foot in Lawrence back in June. We get to see him when I'm watching from the coach's office, him out there working out in July and stepping out and making threes. And his ability around the basket, his length, his athleticism. Yeah, you saw a small dose of what he can do last night. He was 7-7 from the field. He was great. I mean, the comparisons to Hakeem Olajuwon are real. I mean, the guy's got the footwork. And all that being said, I hate to harp on it too much, but the guy's been playing basketball for 3 years. This is his third year of competitive basketball. He grew up playing volleyball and soccer. Some guy sees him and says, "Hey, tall guy, you should play basketball." And sure enough, he moves to Florida, plays high school ball there, and in 2 years basically turns himself into a McDonald's All-American and plays in all the games. Kansas got, I mean, a steal by getting Joel Embiid. I mean, he has got – Bill said it. He goes, out of every pro on this team in 5 years, his opinion, Joel Embiid will be the best out of all of them. And that's a lofty statement when you think about the guys that are going to play at the next level on this team.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, he impressed me last night. He looked like he had an advanced game when, in fact, like you alluded to, he's very raw. The guy that I love, and I loved him since the minute I saw his first move to the hoop in that UL Monroe game, was Wayne Selden. And, he's a kid from just up the road in Massachusetts. He's got that bottled aggression, you know what I mean? He just looks like he goes right to the hoop. Did he come in under the radar in Lawrence, or because it was just all about Wiggins, or is he a guy that everybody looked at and said, he's going to be a stud too?
Well, I think that, he kind of got lost a little bit because when Andrew signed, I mean, Wayne Selden was the prize of that class, and rightly so. So I think it's kind of helped Wayne that it's helped a lot of guys on our team, especially Perry, because he doesn't really like the spotlight. Wiggins has just taken over Sports Illustrated, GQ, Wall Street Journal. I mean, it's crazy around our offices, and it's Wayne is a stud. I mean, Wayne's got the body. He's 6'5", 6'6", about 235. Put together, looks like an NFL linebacker. I mean, he can shoot it. And what I like most about Wayne is that he's got in my opinion, a high basketball IQ. I mean, he makes the right passes and he knows when to shoot. He knows when to pass. And a lot of kids at that age don't have high basketball IQs because they haven't had to have them because they've always been the best athlete. Somebody coached Wayne Selden well, and because he learned how to play the game. And knows how to – he knows the lanes. He knows the little gaps to get in. And then he's not always looking to shoot like most superstars. And I think, Andrew's the guy that's going to get the ball and go to the basket and figure out a way to score. Wayne's got a little bit of both of that. It's not a bad thing with Andrew, but I think that Wayne's got the ability to make the right pass, the easy play. And for an 18-year-old kid, for as good as he is, that's saying something.
Yeah, Greg, I find myself watching the games, and I'm not anywhere near as focused on Wiggins as I had anticipated I would be. I mean, I don't know if that makes me odd or whatever, but I guess I just feel like he's going to eventually assert himself and be more aggressive. But I find myself watching all the other players that we've been talking about. I look around the court. I want to see what Mason and Tharp are doing at the point and where the big guys are moving and what Ellis is doing. Is it you know, out of the realm of possibility that Wiggins is just going to step in one game and turn it on like a switch, or is it just going to be this gradual process like it always is with these freshmen?
Well, I think as you get to know Andrew, I think you're right in that you're with a lot of other people, myself included, that expected, before I saw him play, I expected this superstar. I expected Kevin Durant is what I expected. But he's a great scorer, but I don't think he's not a great shooter. He's going to make outside shots. But what I like about him is that he gets it, too. I mean, he understands that, you know, against Duke, he had 22 points on 9 of 15 from the field. He didn't force anything. He didn't let the situation get to him. And I like the way he carries himself. I think anyone that thinks he's going to be a 25-point-a-game guy, that's not Andrew. He's a passive kid. When he wants to turn it on, he can. That's going to be his hardest thing he's going to have to deal with, is just learning how to play hard all the time. And that's with any young kid. So, you know, the comparisons are unfair. It's not his fault. He's got to live with them. Anything less than player of the, you know, most outstanding player in the Final Four in a national championship, to some people will be a quote-unquote failure, which is unfair. I mean, there's so many good kids out there right now, and Andrew didn't wish any of this on himself, but it is what it is, and you got to deal with it. And he deals with it as good as anyone I've seen, because he, you know, he grew up around athletes. And his dad played in the NBA. His mom was an Olympic world-class sprinter, so it's not like this is foreign to him. But I think his teammates help a lot. I think he's going to be great. I just don't think he's going to be that guy that averages 25 points a game, and I don't think he has to, because he's, you know, it was between Kansas and Florida State, I think, at the very end, and you know, when he really stepped back and thought about it, he's like, you know, I'm going to be on national TV a lot. I got an opportunity to play for a national title. I know I'm going to be here for a year. That's the worst kept secret in the world, that he's, you know, he's not going to be here next year. I mean, I don't know what would have to happen for him not to come back, but it's pretty unlikely. So you love Bill Self, you love the atmosphere, and you come here, and it's great. He surrounds himself with great kids, and what Bill does an amazing job of is convincing kids that winning is fun, and going to Final Fours is fun. So make some sacrifices, and trust me, the rest will come.
Greg, I have one more question for you before I let you go. And it's something that I've had discussions with friends of mine, people that want to know more about Kansas. They're always curious who my favorite player is that I've seen in my lifetime. Now, my dad's was JoJo White. I've always said it's Jacques Vaughn. And people find that amazing. They always think it's going to be Pierce or LaFrance or Heinrich or Collison or Ostertag. Who's the guy in the past 20, 25 years, other than Danny Manning, that you've really enjoyed watching and that you would put up there as the guy in Kansas hoops the last quarter century?
Well, I agree with you on a Jock. I played with Jock for 2 years. High energy guy, just an awesome, awesome kid. I mean, he's doing great now with Orlando, and you always knew. He was just your prototypical leader. I mean, he was lead by example. He was a rah-rah leader. He was the exactly what you'd think of as a leader. In my opinion, my favorite Kansas player over the last 20 years would be Paul Pierce. I mean, because I watched Paul do things that, you know, Roy was a system guy. I mean, you always had to be here, here, and here. Paul, you know, worked within that system, but what was great about Paul is if something didn't work and there was 7 seconds on the clock to score, Paul figured it out. I mean, he was just a true scorer. I mean, what Paul has done at Kansas, and then what he did, what he's doing right now in 15-plus years in the NBA, you know, might go down as one of the should go down as one of the best players at Kansas, and then really a top, I think, top 20 guy in the NBA with the amount of points he scored, and it has a title. So my guy would be Paul.
And I still can't think
I'll backtrack a little bit, that I think that Wilt Chamberlain's the greatest athlete to ever play our sport. I mean, I obviously never saw him play, but when you read about Wilt and understand what he meant to the game of basketball, I think he's the, for the track, the volleyball, everything that the guy did, he was the best at, and that would be my favorite athlete of all time.
Well, Greg, listen, I really appreciate your time. I know you guys are busy in season. I can't disagree with you on Wilt or Pierce. I love both of them. I'll be watching Friday night, and I'll be watching the rest of the year in Rock Chalk Jayhawk, buddy.
All right, sounds good. Good to talk to you.
Thank you very much. We're going to go to a quick commercial break, and we will be right back with the Tri-State Sports Guys.
Is anyone out there?
I think it might be.
This is the Nathaniel County Sheriff's Office. Is anyone out there? We were surrounded by the dead. They were in rioters, what we were told. We have survivors here. Civilians, women, children. Is anyone out there?
Follow the story in the Ragnarok Rising Saga by D.A. Roberts. Available on Amazon, Smashwords, Barnes & Noble, and BooksAMillion.com. Visit RagnarokRising.Weebly.com.
And we're back. We just had a fantastic interview with Kansas color commentator Greg Gurley. Love talking about my Jayhawks, but we're going to take a call right now from, I believe it's a Philly area code. You're out. You're live with the Tri-State Sports Guys. Who's this?
Danny.
Oh, boy. What's up, Michael?
Danny. How are you?
What's going on, kid?
How about this? Rock Chalk Jayhawk. That's
great. Was that great? But, come on, I know you're a Rock Chalk fan. Was that not fantastic?
Quality. You even got some Wilt Chamberlain action going there. That's pretty
good, solid work by you. Mike. This is an all-purpose show. You're not going to get Kansas basketball talk without talking about Wilt the Stilt, okay?
That's wonderful stuff. Paul Pierce, another good one, man. That's certainly a good quality interview, man. That's good work by you.
I appreciate it, bud. Now, I know you're not calling in to talk Kansas. You got to have something else on your mind.
Well, I'm not sure if you know this or not, but, you know, old Phil from Philadelphia loves his hockey, and it's been an agonizing season, to say the least. But, you know, I'm not about to talk Flyers. And then you folks up in Connecticut aren't really interested in Philly, but I will ask you, you know, we got Rick Nash coming back. You got your goalie, he's injured. Novakov is a little hurt. But, you know, you got Vanek. A lot of things changing. Philly's got, like, 5-game unbeaten streak. Things should be getting interesting, man.
Yeah,
what do you have
I
to
agree
say about
jump that,
what
bud. Go.
No. What do you have to say about Pittsburgh? You think they got any takers that could take them down, man?
In the East? Yeah. I mean, as you know, I'm an Islanders fan. I've been on the Rangers bandwagon since the beginning of the year, since before the year started. I've been behind the Rangers. I mentioned last week, I still like their top six forwards. I love the Zuccarello step on the Kreider line. There's nobody better than Lundqvist when he's on. I like their top 4D. I like Strawman. They're not playing consistently enough. I watched a little bit of the Boston game last night, although I was mainly focused on my Jayhawks. I like, and you know, you and I have had this discussion before, though. I like a lot of the parts the Flyers have, but there's a lot of things I don't understand about the Flyers. Like, how can Giroux disappear for weeks at a time?
So they
get rid of Lars Gillette, and they make all these different moves. And there has to be some way, doesn't there, that they get those guys going? I mean, they can't just have guys that are that talented like him and LeCavalier, and they have some good D-men, and they just seem to fold, right?
I mean, dude, it's shocking, just absolutely shocking. But at the same time, it's a very strange. I mean, I'm sure you know, as a Minnesota fan, you're a Vikings fan, you're an Islanders fan. You know, people tease you probably all the time since you were little. But whatever, you know, it's for me. I'm the butt of every hockey joke that's known to mankind. You know, like it's just who I am. It's who my Flyers are. People just think, oh my God, you're what a disgrace, you know? Just fire the coach, what was it, 4 games? I don't even remember. I was that, like, what? That's crazy. What are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, it's, you know, I'm a Laviolette guy. Yeah, like my total levy, like guys, is like you can him, and it's like for what, Craig Berube? And I love the Chief. He's like fan favorite, but dude, Craig Berube was just like, no, this can't be happening. But dude, I feel like they can give it a good shot. I mean, dude, all you got to do is get in the dance, my man. It's very much like the big old dance in basketball, college basketball. But you got to get in the playoffs, dude, and anything can happen. The Flyers got in the Cup Finals as an 8th seed, and you know, anything can happen. I mean, I'm not saying they're going to win the Cup, but you know, any team gets hot at the right time. And dude, the goalie situation, can't believe I'm saying this, in Philly right now is good. It's solid right now. Mason's playing great, man. The kid's playing great. It's a shame they didn't do this a couple of years back when they had the solid, you know, foundation. But
I mean,
here we are.
At some point, you know, Holmgren has to be responsible for something in Philly. I mean, you alluded to the fact that people around here don't care about the Flyers. People around here don't care about hockey. So I'm glad to talk about the Flyers or the Phoenix Coyotes. It doesn't make any difference to me. But at some point, you know, again, you and I have had the talk off the air, obviously, about the fact that Laviolette's a good coach. He knows his stuff, so they get rid of him. Okay. At some point, Holmgren has to be responsible for having a roster of, like, 24 guys, and, like, 23 of them are defensemen. I mean, at some point, you have to be responsible for the personnel when you're the general manager, don't you?
Yes.
Yeah,
old,
you would think.
Al Gill, you know, is what
that's
your
defenseman in the league. Defenseman.
Old Hal. But it's. I mean, yeah, it definitely comes down to the GM making some bad decisions, but much like the baseball team in this town. But I won't even get started on that. That's Charlie, but I must say, I'm pretty excited for your Islanders, man. I know they've kind of been down for a while, but they certainly seem to go in the right direction. And I mean, you and I have also talked about this, that, you know, you throw a great, and no disrespect to Nabokov, but you throw a quality goaltender, you throw a Lundqvist on that team, you know, I mean, they have some serious good talent on that team, and they're going in the right direction, and we'll see, man. I mean, I'm not sure really what they got going on in the system, but they certainly have some talent at the top level right now, for sure.
Well, I tell you what, Mike, I'm going to make one bold statement to you, and then I'm going to let you go because my co-host is currently calling into his own show right now.
Ah!
But here's my bold statement for you. Travis Hamonic will win a Norris Trophy before the age of 30. Just throwing it in there. The kid's outstanding.
There it is.
He's a great defenseman. He's fantastic. I'm just throwing it out there for any Islanders fans that are listening. Travis Hamonic wins a Norris Trophy in the next 7-8 years. Mark it down. Michael, I appreciate your call, buddy,
right
calling. I always love hearing your thoughts on things, kid.
Hey, anytime, man. Thanks for having me on, Dan. Good work.
Thanks, man. Talk to you, buddy.
See you, bud.
Staying on the Tucci Lumber Hotline, we've got one of the hottest tickets in the tri-state area right now. They call him Mike Boat. What's going on, buddy?
Let me get this straight, Danny. I call in. I'm on the road coming from a nice, gorgeous dinner, and I call in, and you make me wait so that I can hear you talk to some guy from Philly talk hockey?
Absolutely. You should have seen me and Tony D having a party right here. You should have seen us laughing about that, bud. It was the sweetest revenge because you hate hockey so much or you hate on hockey so much that, honestly, I can't even tell you how excited I was doing that to you.
It's like you set me up. It's like this show, it's like the Eddie Murphy movie where he takes over and I come in like thinking I'm going to be, you know, a Wall Street Titan. And you forgot all about me. You changed the locks and the doors, and it's an all-hockey and gay youth show.
It was great, dude. I got to tell you, like I said, I enjoyed every moment of that. I think it was a 5-minute call, and I just knew you had to be boiling, and it was tremendous.
Oh, fuck, with the box office, and you didn't even throw in my main man, Cam Talbot. Can you give Cam Talbot a little love?
Dude, I only stay on the Rangers for about 30 seconds, okay? We were talking – stay with us now, Michael. We were talking Flyers, Islanders, okay? We were very little on the Rangers, a little bit of the Penguins. You know, you got to stay with me here, bud. Do you have a question for me or Tony or anything, or what's going on?
Well, Well, I do have a question. So I don't. I haven't listened to any of the show. All I know is I got two text messages from people talking about what a fantastic interview you gave to some color guy from KU, and that one guy said he'd be shocked if they don't offer you a job. Are you leaving the show? You got something to tell me?
I got to tell you, right now I'm receiving some text messages for possible flights to Lawrence, Kansas. That's all I'm saying. I'm not trying to let any cats out of the bag, but here's the thing, bud. You and I played hardball together, right? We were both pretty decent players. If you put one in my wheelhouse, I'm going to do some damage. I'm going to touch four pillows is what I do. You give
me an interview,
it's done. I mean, what do you want me to do? Not take them deep?
The guy made a mistake. You were sitting dead red, and you got your pitch, and you knocked it out of the park. I can't wait to listen to the replay.
Yeah, man, I hope you enjoy it. I got to say, Greg Gurley couldn't have been a nicer guy. It was informative. You know, it's just something where, you know, I love the team so much, as you guys break my chops for. But to talk to a guy who's as into it, play there, obviously, I was just not good enough. Mike, if you want to be honest, I just was not good enough to play at Kansas or at Sacred Heart. So if we're going to be honest about that, it was great to talk to him, man. He was insightful, informative, and a perfect gentleman, and I hope he calls back whenever he wants to, man. It was great.
Yeah, well, I'm sure all the Tri-State sports fans couldn't wait for 40 minutes of Flyers hockey and KU basketball. You give the fans what they want. I like that out of you.
You know what? I told you, well, you got to listen to it. You were stuck on the line. You had to listen to it. I told Mike from Philly, this is an all-purpose operation we're running here, buddy. This isn't just Jets and Giants talk when Santa's in charge, okay? We get down to brass tacks. We'll talk basketball. We'll talk whatever you want. We'll talk a little bocce ball. You know, I'm Paisan. I can play it. I'll talk whatever you want to talk. What do you want to talk about? Can we talk about your Jets?
Yeah, you know, we can talk about the Jets. So let me walk you down my Sunday. So I had, it was my my little niece's baptism, right? And my little daughter, little Brooklyn, little sweetest little thing, she had a little tickle in her throat, right? So I said, look, guys, I'd love to bring her, but I don't want to get the whole party sick. I got to stay home. Now, this is what kind of daughter my daughter is. She basically got me out of this christening so that I could watch the Jets. So it was almost like God looking down on me on a beautiful Sunday, saying, "You are getting out of your niece's baptism, your only niece's baptism, so that you can watch the Jets." And my God, from the beginning, you knew things were going to go were going wrong. And I was like, you know what? It was the one good game, one bad game scenario that we talked about. You were hoping the bye would kind of break that up. But here we are, and they're the first team in NFL history, I heard, to start out a season through 10 games, win one, lose one, to go 5-5, and it's just amazing. And it's all on Geno Smith. People want to bash on the defense and all. They're all they are about stats, and they got low yardage, but they can't get the big stop. They were in the Jets territory all day because Geno Smith kept turning the ball over. The guy's a bum, like I've been saying.
Mike, I got to tell you, dude. You know I don't watch a lot of the NFL, mainly because it's bunk, and I just can't stand watching it. It's such an unbelievably upsetting, like, come down from Saturdays for me. Like, college football is just so awesome. And I tuned in to watch that game. Is it still Ralph Wilson Stadium, Tom?
Sir.
It is? Up in Orchard Park, and I got to tell you, dude, like, we've had the discussion, Mike, and you're obviously the Jets expert, but What the hell goes on that Geno Smith can play like a complete spaz? Like, I mean, he made Christian Ponder look like Joe Montana. How does that happen? How can you be, was it 8-for-23? I mean, is he that bad? Or what is it that you can look like you belong in, like, high school football when you're playing in the National Football League?
Well, I mean, I think you could just look at his track record at West Virginia. You remember the start of the season he had last year, which is basically what got him drafted in the second round, because he started out so great against when he's in the right situation, when they're against favorable matchups, when he's got protection. And I know he's, like, mobile and all, but I still don't think he's got pocket presence for a guy who's supposedly so mobile, because he was just getting drilled. And it's like, you know, and you got to give credit to Mike Pettine, the defensive coordinator up there, who, you know, I wrote an article right when he was leaving the Jets, and you would say, well, we're going to find out whether this guy was really, you know, a good defensive coordinator or whether he was just, you know, living under the coattails of Rex Ryan. But this guy knows what he's doing. He was calling up blitzes And, I mean, they had no blocking schemes for him, and Geno Smith didn't see him coming. I mean, he's got no presence back there to read that kind of stuff. He looks down at his receivers, which I'm sure Patton was just harping on in the week leading up. And, I mean, that's what led to the easy, easy interception that he was throwing.
Yeah, I mean, how much of that do you think is, you're talking about Patton leaving and being Buffalo, how much of that is the old, like, John Gruden in that Super Bowl against the Raiders, where it just seemed like, if you had the foresight at that time, you would have just loaded up on the Bucs. You would have said, he knows everything the Raiders are doing, everything Rich Gannon's doing. How much of that is just Patton, like, just knowing, here's what Rex and his guys are going to run. Here's how they're going to run things. Here's a quarterback who's not very good at that level, so I'm just going to attack every single thing you do. How much of it is that, or just the Jets just stunk on Sunday?
See, I don't think it's as much as that as people want to make it out to be, because, I mean, Marty Morningway's got a completely different offense than Tony Sperano had. So I don't think, you know, his institutional knowledge of being with the team for, you know, the 5 years or whatever it was prior to that, I don't think it was a lot of that. I think it was him just throwing up defenses based on a rookie quarterback, not going back and harking on his knowledge of the program or knowledge of a system, because it's a completely different system with a completely different cast of characters. I mean, I was a guy who was all about, you know, the rookie lineman Winters that they have, who has really played well, and he just was lost out there. And it seemed like Patton was like, okay, they got a rookie quarterback, they got some inexperience on the offensive line, and that's what we're going to attack. And that's exactly what they were doing. I mean, you saw the back of that guy's jersey all day long, because he was looking at the guy he was supposed to be blocking, his assignment, taking Geno Smith to the ground.
Yeah, now what was your take, dude? I can't remember exactly what you said. You know, you got Baltimore coming up. You had said 2 weeks ago, I think it was, that they were going to, what, beat Baltimore? Or was that a game that you were worried about? And what do you think now? Because I just took a quick look at the newspaper. They're getting 3.5 points. And in my experience looking at the NFL, that's never good. It's never good to be getting 3.5 on the road. It almost always seems like they end up getting beat by 10. So is this a game now that you win, lose? Now you're expecting to beat Baltimore? They're 4-6, defending champs. I just wrote in my little mixed article you and I did about all the guys that have, you know, winning experience on that team. Is this a game now as a Jets fan you're looking at like, we should win this? Or is this one that you look at and go, oh boy, here we are, we're going to be, you know, 5-6, we're done?
Well, here's what I said last week was, you look at their schedule and you say there's a lot of winnable games, and the two tough games are obviously at Baltimore and then the Carolina game on the 15th. But what you've seen out of the Jets, and they're unpredictable to the point where they're predictable, they're going to lose a game that you think it's a slam dunk they should win. Even though they were underdogs last week, they were getting a point. They might have finished up even or even maybe later. But it was, you know, close. It wasn't like they were a favorite last week. And then there's going to be a game that you think they're going to lose and they're going to win. So I actually like our chances this week down in Baltimore. I know they haven't done well down in Baltimore since Rex left and all. But I think that this is just what Rex Ryan thrives on. And I think that's why, almost why they struggled in year 3 and 4 under him, is because they finally had some expectations. I think that it's amazing that under his entire tenure, whenever you think they're ready to take that next step, they don't. But then when you think you think it's time to count them out, you know, they go out and win a game they're not supposed to. And you've seen that time and time again this season. And I think so. I feel very confident that they can go down there and win that game. For those reasons, it's not an X's and O's thing. It's not a matchup thing. I know Baltimore still, although, you know, they've lost some guys on defense, they still are very good against the run. And you think, well, the Jets are going to have to run the football in order to win this game, because Geno Smith is just completely lost. But it, as down as I am on Geno Smith, it would not surprise me if him go out there and play turnover-free football, move the ball, move the chains with his legs a little bit, throw a touchdown or two. And they go out and win a hard-fought game. And I said in my article earlier in this week, I predict them winning 17-13 and let the Jets defense, you know, get a backbone and actually lead it, because, you know, as much as the game wasn't on the defense, Rex Ryan never wants to see his team give up 37 points. And, I think I could see them bouncing back and getting a win here.
Yeah, Mike, I mean, I've made the comparisons, in talking with you on the show, where I've said how this Jets team reminds me somewhat of last year's Vikings team, you know, that wins 10, goes to the playoffs, And I found last year, like looking at Ponder, I think it was a Detroit game, he started to complete some passes like with regularity, and the more he completed, it was kind of like being at a craps table. Like the more numbers that got thrown, the more I was expecting a seven. You know what I mean? Like the more he completed passes, the more I was like, oh boy, what line is he going to throw this next one to now, because he's starting to look good. And now when I've seen the Jets the last couple weeks, I missed 2 weeks ago, I've seen two of the last three, and it's like the more Geno does good things, the more I'm looking at it going, oh, boy, he's got to be throwing a grenade at his feet soon enough, doesn't he? Like, is that what you're thinking watching him, or are you just taking it for what it is as a Jets fan?
Yeah, no, that is exactly what I'm thinking when I watch Geno Smith. I was even thinking that in that Atlanta game, which now doesn't look like as great as a win, obviously, is what they've done since that game. But, yeah, that's exactly what I think when I watch Geno Smith. You watch him. And, you know, there's times he makes the very tough throws down the field, you know, fitting the ball into the seam, throwing a ball on the sideline that only his receiver can get. And you're like, this guy has the capability to make every throw. But then again, there's times when he just makes really dumb decisions. So it is that ticking time bomb. It's like, when is it going to come? And he still just doesn't – I'll harp on it again. He doesn't have that presence yet to read blitzes before they come. Like the elite quarterbacks have. And I don't know, obviously he's a rookie, but you see rookies being able to pick that thing up. I honestly think that that's not something you learn with experience. You either have it or you don't have it, that sixth sense of feeling pressure. And I don't see that he has that. I mean, he's able, because of athletic ability, at times to escape pressure, but more times than not, he's just not feeling it. It's too late.
Yeah, I mean, I don't listen to much sports talk, anything, as you know, but I did catch former Steelers fullback Merrill Hodge the other day on ESPN talking. He kind of mentioned what you just said, which is some of his reads seem a little off, some of his progressions seem a little bit off, whatever. I don't get into logistics. I'm not going to be a phony about it. But he did mention, and I have noticed, that he misses a lot of guys that are, like, in the open. You know, like, he mentioned it, and he even diagrammed it up, you know, like a 12-yard post or in route or something. And the ball's not even close. I mean, and it was one of the tight ends. The dude's wide open. And then he was asked the $64,000 question, is it fixable? And he goes, if you can't hit him, I mean, even as a rookie, I mean, you're just not going to hit him. That's just not, you know, what you do. You know, you don't see guys like Andrew Luck miss those throws. And this kid just seems to routinely miss them. So, I mean, do you think it's fixable at all? Or is that just something like, geez, Geno just occasionally misses a wide open guy right in the open?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think something like that actually is somewhat fixable, because I've also seen him make very difficult throws. So I think something like that, I mean, you go back to like Donovan McNabb. I mean, that guy wasn't always the most accurate guy, but he also could show glimpses of being very accurate. I mean, as far as like, you know, touchdown to interceptions, he's got one of the most best ratios of all time. But he also, you would watch him and be very frustrated because he would miss open guys. I'm not as worried of the physical part of him missing throws. I don't think he'll ever be a Drew Brees. But, you know, there's very few that are. I mean, you're going to see a lot of guys. I mean, Eli Manning, who throws as good of a deep ball as anybody this season, has consistently missed open deep guys. I think that is, you know, that's a little bit of hit or miss, and the more you get accustomed to your wide receivers and your tight ends and where they're going to be, that can come. I'm more worried about just his pocket presence and his decision-making and looking down a receiver. And somebody questioned him, an interviewer, early on this season after a bad game, do you think you're looking down receivers? And he flat out said, no, I don't think I am. Well, I mean, you could just watch the D-backs and how they're reacting to him. They seem to just jump routes on him because they know exactly where the ball's going. And I don't put that on Marty Marniewag. I think that they're trying to give him a complete playbook to play with, but he's not utilizing it.
Yeah, Mike, listen, we got to pay some bills here real quickly and take a quick break. I have a yes or no question for you before we go to the break. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Did you watch any of the Kansas-Iona game last night?
0 minutes of it.
You can't even answer yes. See, that's your political background right there. You can't even, I mean, you know, it's like, let me ask you a question, Senator. Well, let me answer that by asking you this. See, that's why you're difficult. We're going to take a quick break. You'll be right back with the Tri-State Sports Guys.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Fantasy Football Manager Guy.
Mr. Fantasy Football Manager Guy.
Every year you assemble your closest friends to prepare for another season in the knockdown, drag-out world of make-believe football.
4 minute chairs.
You were born with the one skill every manager needs to play fantasy football. Absolutely no skill playing real football.
Not so good at catching.
Imaginary catches. Imaginary touchdowns. Next up, an imaginary score with an imaginary woman.
Good imagination.
So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, O Swami of the sidelines. You may come in dead last, but you're always first with us.
Mr. Fantasy Football Manager Guy.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
And we are back. We just had a fantastic call from Mike DePalma. He's one of the sharpest guys you'll ever meet. He just can't answer a yes or no question. I mean, Tony knows it. Tony's nodding his head over here. The guy has such deep roots in politics, he won't even answer a yes or no question. It makes it very difficult. We're going to get into a little bit of baseball right now. Phones are blowing up. Everything's blowing up. We got Prince Fielder. Ready for this, Tom? Traded to the Texas Rangers for one Ian Kinsler. In a word, I mean, what do you make of that? Tony's confused.
It's big.
It is big. I mean, I don't know. Is this just because Fielder stunk?
That they did that?
At the latter end of the playoffs?
I'd say it had a lot to do with it.
I would have to agree with you. I mean, I don't know. I'm hearing here. I'm looking at Facebook. I'm hearing people raving about what a great trade this is
for the Tigers. Yeah.
And honestly, I don't necessarily see that. I can just see Prince with that svelte body of his just blasting balls out of the ballpark. And he might hit 450 homers this year.
Yeah.
You don't know. But everybody's now going to base a guy who's had an outstanding career, and they're going to base his worth on some games in which he stunk. And what makes that interesting is guys like Mark Teixeira, who is a playoff bum, okay? Folks, if you don't watch baseball, or if you don't know anything about baseball and you watch it all the time, Teixeira's a bum, Swisher's a playoff bum, Alex Rodriguez is a playoff bum, and yet all everybody does around here is talk about how great those guys are. Okay? Now Prince Fielder, all of a sudden, he's a total dork because he has, 12 or 14 bad games in the playoffs. When the guy hits, I don't know, lasers all over the field all the time. Now, I've liked him, dude. I'm a Cubs fan. I've liked him since he was a Brewer, and I can't stand the Brewers. And now I have to hear people tell me that he stinks. I don't get it. But listen, we're a show that's for the people, okay? Tony agrees with that. Tony's almost choking on his drink over here. We have a fan right here in beautiful Norwalk, Mr. Tom Casuto, who wants to know if Ellsbury, Chu, or Braun, like, what would that do for the culture of the New York Mets? Okay, now, I'll stay with the B word, bum, for Ryan Braun. He's a bum. We don't need to even talk about it. Let's throw Cano into the mix. I don't think the Mets can sign him. I don't think the Mets can afford him. With a little history of Ponzi scheme involvement. But I'll tell you who was an interesting guy there, and Mike and I have had the discussion here about the Mets outfield when you look at guys like Lagares and Dendecker, and Mike should be here any minute now to shed more light on his Mets, but Ellsbury's a guy that, you know, I mentioned in an article yesterday on our site, tristatesportsguys.com, that Ellsbury's a guy I would love to see at Wrigley. I just think he's a guy, I mean, he's shown pop in his career, and he's a left-handed batter at Fenway. Him at Wrigley, I mean, heads up on Waveland and Sheffield, the kid could just blast the ball. And Shin-Soo Chu is a guy who had the unbelievable first half last year. He was batting 400, I don't know, Mike would know, probably like almost until May. He was blasting balls at the Great American Ballpark there in Cincy. I don't know if he's a guy who's aided by playing in a bandbox, but he's certainly a good player. Braun is obviously an excellent player. But do you want that guy? You're a young Mets team. Do you have any interest in anything like him being around that team where you're starting to build with some young talent? You've got a couple of promising young pitchers. I know Harvey's going to be out with the Tommy John rehab. But you've got a kid like Braun you're going to bring in and do what? I mean, that's the thing, the problem I have. I mean, Cano's not a guy, really, to me, that I want around a bunch of young players, because I've always argued, and Mike disagrees and thinks I'm old-fashioned. Maybe he's right. Cano's just a lethargic lollygagger. I know he's uber-talented, but do you want those guys? So, I mean, if I'm looking at Tom's text here and his Facebook post, of those four, who would I want? It would be Ellsbury. Because to me, he's a guy, he comes in, he's not going to give me any static. Francona raved about him. Farrell raves about him. Even Bobby Valentine, who's a clown, raved about him. He's not a problem. And he's a guy that you look at and go, in that Mets lineup, I mean, I know he's a leadoff hitter. I mean, you know, he could bat third in a Mets lineup. I mean, that's how good this kid is. He's an outstanding player. So if I had to look at those four names, Cano, Braun, Chu, and Ellsbury, could they change the culture in Queens? Absolutely. Absolutely. Cano and Braun could both do that. They could both put behinds in the seats. They could both do a lot of things. All four are obviously outstanding players. But I think of them, and while Ellsbury, you could argue, probably isn't as good as Cano, even though they're very different positions that they play, Ellsbury is the one guy that if the Cubs could sign one of those four guys, I would want Ellsbury. Number one, because I hate Braun. Number two, because I can't watch Cano. I can't. I try not to watch Yankee games anyway. I honestly can't watch him. I find him intolerable. Everything about him, how you could be that good and play the game as lazily as he does, is beyond me. It really is. So if you're looking to change the culture, yeah, Braun and Cano. But if you're looking to bring in a guy who could actually show young players how to hustle while batting 300 and probably hitting 15 to 25 bombs and driving in runs and stealing 50 bases, Jacoby Ellsbury is your guy to me. Chu, I think, benefits from playing at the Great American Ballpark. I mean, you'd have to be Joe Votto to look at a guy and just go, yeah, he's just good. Or, you know, or maybe Brandon Phillips or something like that. But Chu had some good years in Cleveland, but I think he was definitely aided by their playing in Cincy. So, yeah, I mean, for me, it's Ellsbury. No frills with him. Just a kid that's going to play hard, do all the right things, and that's that for me. But I'm going to flip. We don't have to go to a break, do we, Tom? Okay, perfect. We're going to stick with baseball because we got into it before. Then we got a call from friend of the show, Greg Gurley. You know, that's what I do, Tom. I just talk. I talk to Kansas basketball people. That's what I do.
That happens when you got control of the mic, right?
That's what happens when there's one mic and it's sitting in front of my fat face. I just talk KU hoops, Rock Chalk, J-Hawk, and we do it. But before Mr. Gurley called, we were talking about a guy who's the bomb, A-Rod. I call him Stink Rod, Tone.
Yeah.
That's what I call him.
Sounds about right.
I'm going to tell you a little story, Tony, and you can put your head down like you're back in, like, Tracy school, take a little nap or something. I'm going to tell you a story about Biogenesis. It's a little book I wrote. Here's what happened, okay? Everybody went to Biogenesis.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody took drugs. Everybody started hitting bombs,
yep.
Okay? And then when push came to shove and your chickens came home to roost, everybody was guilty, and everybody got caught, except now Alex Stinkrod Rodriguez. A-Rod now is telling Mike Francesa, that blowhard, he's telling him he didn't do anything wrong at any point. Now, here's a guy, God bless his heart, I speak some Spanish. He speaks English and Spanish. The litany of players that were Latino that went there to Biogenesis, mm-hmm. that said in different ways or intimated otherwise, they were brought there by Alex Rodriguez. And now, A-Rod looks at the other liar, Francesa, and says, I did nothing wrong. And it reminded me, if you remember, A Few Good Men,
yeah.
The Marine there, who's yelling for Hal. Hal, Hal. And then he goes, but we did nothing wrong. What did we do wrong? What you did was you beat up a Marine and you gagged him and you killed him. So A-Rod's looking at me going, me? What did I do wrong? I did nothing wrong. He is, I would argue, he is a bigger blight on the game of baseball than Pete Rose and Joe Jackson combined.
Absolutely. He's become a joke.
It's the perfect word.
Every,
he's a joke.
Yeah.
And I listen to Yankee fans, okay? And here's the problem that I have. I listen to Yankee fans. They kill on other players from other teams. They killed on Manny Ramirez when he came in with Boston. They killed on him. He took steroids. He did this. They kill on David Ortiz, okay? And I understand the rivalry. All right, I get it, you know? But when it's your guy, I mean, when it was Sammy Sosa, I would have just as soon strung him up. I mean, he was that bad of a human being. I mean, he's just a horrible guy who cared about the home runs that he hit, who cared about anything. But there are Cubs fans that went, well, at least he was likable. Mark McGwire is very likable. He's just a cheater. I mean, but he is very likable. Okay? Alex Rodriguez isn't even likable. Pete Rose is a knob, okay? Joe Jackson could barely even read and write his own name. They're all idiots. But A-Rod to Yankee fans, they're like, well, but no, he's fine. Why is he fine? Can anyone really explain that to me? How is it A-Rod's fine? Maybe we need a little bit of Mike-o here, his cynicism, because he tries to put me in my place when it comes to steroids, because I say put every guy that did them, and I get chastised by Mike for loving Derek Jeter, and I'm not even a Yankee fan. And then I get the question from people, well, what if Jeter took them? If I found out Derek Jeter took steroids, I'm not even drinking, Tone, and I'm slurring my words over here. If I found out Derek Jeter took steroids, I would say the same thing, I promise you, on my mother that I'm saying about A-Rod.
Yeah, I mean, makes sense.
So, I mean,
it makes sense.
Mike and I talk about not being hypocrites. We talk about all these different things. And I'm just saying, they're all bums. They're all clowns, period. We're going to go to the Tucci Lumber Hotline. I'm not positive who this is because I don't memorize people's numbers. I'm hoping it's Matt from Norwalk, but who do we have with us on the Tucci Lumber Hotline right now?
It's Nick from Norwalk.
Uh-oh. It's not Matt from Norwalk. But it's very exciting, Nick.
Number one supporter.
I mean, how you doing, kid?
I'm all right. Christmas came early for me today, I guess you could say. You know, I got to see A-Rod on, and, you know, I understand where you're coming from, but, I mean, do we not all agree that this is a witch hunt on behind C-League? I mean, him not coming to testify, is that not – does that not show enough that, okay, maybe he did something, but why did he not come and test? I mean – That just to me, just, you know, I'm almost speechless. You know, I don't know what else to say. I mean, he's making A-Rod look like he's, you know, a sympathetic figure.
Well, here's the thing, Nick. I don't disagree with you, but the thing is this: people make that argument all the time. They go, he's going after A-Rod, or they went after Bonds, or they went after Giambi or Clemens or whomever. And I've said it for 10 years now. I think it's unfair when they go after one guy. So I agree with you in that argument. But Seelig's a clown too. And if people want to say
I agree.
He's made for Major League Baseball, I don't care. Okay, but the fact of the matter is, there are bigger fish to fry. Whatever it was 7-8 years ago when Fernando Vina admitted to taking PEDs, no one cared. Mm-hmm. I mean, cared, didn't care. I'm looking at Tony. Tony doesn't care. No one cared. But when Mark McGwire's name came out, because he was breaking records he had no business breaking, and if I'm going to be forced as a Willie Mays fan, I was put to bed with Willie Mays stories. If I'm going to be forced to watch Alex Rodriguez hit 661 homers, I want to know if they're legit. That's what it comes down to, right, wrong, or indifferent. I agree with you. Is it a witch hunt? Yes. And A-Rod could help himself by being a little bit more likable. I mean, really, if you just want to boil it down to brass tacks, if he could be a little bit more likable, he would do himself a great service to get maybe a fair shake for Major League Baseball. But he is a D-bag, and people want to punish him for it. I mean, wouldn't you at least agree with that? That okay, it is a
win. Listen, I agree. He did. He took PEDs. I don't know why he did go on Francesa and say all that. I mean, there's something there. I mean, but so is every. One out of five guys are probably taking something. You know what I mean? I don't know if it's still going on today, but 2, 3, 4, 6, 9 years ago, it was the norm for players, you know? And to me, it's like, who cares? Big deal. Let him take it. If he's got to take it, let him use it.
Yeah, I mean, people make the argument that everybody was doing it, okay? And then I've even heard arguments as stupid as, you know, you don't punish Gaylord Perry or Phil Niekro or whatever for throwing spitballs. But here's the thing,
yeah.
Okay? Here's the thing. In those days, you could spit on the ball. You could spit on it. But in Major League Baseball 10, 15, 20 years ago, there was a sign in every clubhouse that said these illegal substances, PEDs, HGH, whatever you want to call them, steroids, they're not legal. And it wasn't something that was always tested for. They didn't always have things in place. But players knew that this was, you're gaining a competitive advantage, okay? They might as well have just taken those out and said, and handed out greenies or PEDs
well,
or HGH.
Well, I think Canseco and McGuire were handing it out at one point. No, I mean, at the
Major League Baseball.
At one juncture, I'm sure Yankee Bat Boys back in the 90s were on steroids, you know? I mean.
Yeah, well, I mean, but I'm talking about Major League Baseball, okay? Handing out the actual drugs. If that's how lax you're going to be when you look at everything that's transpired in baseball, if that's how lax you're going to be in policing anything, then just hand them out. Just hand out the drugs to everybody and say, you know what, the argument that the Hall of Fame is diminished or it doesn't matter or anything like that is just ridiculous. It does matter, and I've always maintained that.
I agree.
If you're a real fan of the game and you understand the history of the game and you know players in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, it does matter. It does matter that a player's plaque or his bust is going to go right up next to Mickey Mantle's. It does matter. You can make concessions about every one of those old guys. Ty Cobb might have killed somebody. Mickey Mantle was an alcoholic. All kinds of guys. You know, they got Willie Mays involved in some game.
Why don't we just build a separate wing? Just build a separate wing for the 90s on up, you know?
Dude, they should put it in a different building. Put it in a bomb shelter somewhere like they did with Johnny Carson's tapes. Put it somewhere where I don't have to see it because I don't want to see it. And I don't like A-Rod, okay? I've never minced words about that. But I'm tired.
Yeah, I know.
I'm tired of everybody telling me that it – and I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just tired of hearing it, that it's this witch hunt. Yeah. The witch hunt, it very well could be. It certainly looks like one.
It finally concluded that way today when Selig decided, and it was Selig himself who told Manfred he's not coming, he's not testifying. I mean, you can only draw one conclusion that he wanted to put his head on the mantle, like A-Rod said. He's leaving, he's out of office, he's going to get his one last, you know, catch of the year, and that's it, you know? I mean, where do you get the 211 games from, though? That's been what's bothering me about the whole thing. I mean,
seem
to pull that out of the air. I mean, 132, 106, it's just like any one of those numbers. Well, why 211, you know?
Yeah,
and,
I mean,
everybody's using it.
It doesn't even really matter, does it? I mean, if they put the guy in.
No, it really doesn't.
Does it even matter? I mean, the guy's a bum.
No.
His records mean nothing. None of it matters. They should just really just banish his name from the history of the game. It means nothing. I mean, I understand some of them are valid.
I will say as a Yankee fan, though, I am basing on renewing my season tickets on potentially having A-Rod there. You know what I mean? Last year I waited to after the winter meetings to see who was going to be signed and if it was going to be worth it and all that. And as a Yankee fan, the draw is A-Rod, and that's what the Yankees need. I mean, like you're saying, Cano isn't a draw. Look at the ratings. We're down across TV, radio, and attendance. We're down the whole beginning of the season without Jeter, without A-Rod.
Yeah, but see, that's where I think you're wrong, because if I was a Yankee fan and I was looking to renew my season tickets, I would want to go down on games where Brendan Ryan was playing.
I do like Brendan. I do like the Brendan Ryan, but I'm a bigger Jason Nix fan, so it's – also wondering about how that's going to play out. But the rumors that they wanted a Stephen Drew to come in and play third base in case A-Rod is, you know, I mean, I'm going to renew him regardless. It's just, you know, I want to see A-Rod. That's, you know, he's the draw, you know.
You
either boo him or cheer him. And I had gotten in fights with people in my section for people booing him when he was up at bat, you know. That's just me being a jerk, but, you know.
Yeah, see, I've always kind of thought that, you know, when I go to a sporting event, I don't boo anyone because I'm there to see you guys. They're all better than I was. I just want to see him play. But, Nick, I appreciate your call. We're going to take another quick call from
All right, Danny.
Thanks, buddy.
Paco
in Norwalk. This is fantastic. He probably wants to talk about the Michigan basketball team against Iowa State the other night.
Oh, man, that loss the other night by Michigan. Horrible. What's going on with Brooklyn? I want to know. Are they losing to Charlotte?
Listen about Brooklyn. They got to figure some things out. Once Jason Kidd gets his rotation down, it's a wrap, dude.
Gets his coaching down.
I think we figured it out already. They got to start from scratch.
Yeah. Blow it up.
Blow it up already. Blow it up. Question I have, talking about this A-Rod. Why, Dan, why would someone like you hate A-Rod so much? Why?
I just covered that, dude. I just covered
I don't understand. Someone like David Ortiz, he's a legend in Boston. But you guys can say whatever you want about dietary stuff. They took steroids. He took it.
You just asked me, Pac. I just told you. I just covered with Nick from Norwalk. Ortiz is a bum. A-Rod's a bum.
I'm sorry. I'm in the car coming home from work, 9 o'clock. I missed what you said. I apologize.
I hate all of them. I hate every single one of them. I hate A-Rod's face. I hate his stats. I hate seeing him up by Willie Mays. It's disgusting. So if David Ortiz hit 159 homers, I would hope something horrible happened to him so he didn't tie Willie Mays. Because it's that disgusting, dude. That's all I'm saying.
Something a lot of people don't want to hear about. But how are my Islanders going to turn this around, Dan?
You got to get a goaltender, Paco, and you know it. Kevin Poulin's not going to cut it.
When's Kamakoff coming?
Hopefully never. Hopefully never. But I'll tell you what the deal is, dude.
That's a horrible thing to say.
They have this year, they have the most second most guys in the league with 20 or more points right now. But the problem is that lazy defense and no goaltending. The top two lines have been great. The Clutterbuck line, the Martin line have been great. They have a defense missing assignments, and they have horrible goaltending. And if you watch the games, Pac, I'm just saying, you'll see exactly that every night. They only get bailed out when the Tavares gets going and when Clutterbuck's line starts grinding. That's when they get going and they're able to stop teams.
Yeah. I think it's 6 out of the last 7. They've given up 3 or more goals. It's insane.
No, it's
hard. Hockey. I just want to say good luck for you guys. I'm looking forward to listening to you during the Thanksgiving game.
I appreciate it, buddy. You going to be listening in?
Good luck. Yeah, definitely going to be listening or at the game watching. I'll listen afterwards.
Fantastic, buddy. Thanks for the call, man.
No problem. Good luck, guys.
Thank you. Michael's coming back to the mic. What are we going to talk about now that you're all jazzed
maybe,
up?
Maybe my suit? Maybe how great I look in a pinstripe suit?
Let me take a look at him.
I mean, I took the jacket off because now I'm in my own home.
Yeah.
You don't wear a suit. And you don't put your, you know, it's like you don't wear
suits. I don't wear suits, period.
You don't wear them.
Look at me.
This was a star-studded gala I was just at for the mayor, the outgoing mayor of New Haven. Close personal friend. I hobnob with the big shots.
I just talk to Kansas guys.
Well, that's all you do. You just take calls from the Midwest.
That's all I do. I told Tony, really, you talked to Woody Johnson.
Yeah.
Beautiful interview. It's your wheelhouse. It was good.
Yeah.
I talked to a Kansas guy. That's all it is. I think what it comes down to is the feedback we're getting. It's just how much more likable I am than you.
That's what it is. Did you come off as much of an ass-kisser as I did when I talked to Woody Johnson?
But again, I'm dealing with a color commentator.
Yeah.
Not the owner of the University of Kansas. But I would have, Johnson & Johnson. Yeah, I would have kissed a little tail if that was the case. But, no, it was great, dude. Your call-in, fantastic. Me and Tony just been holding it down.
Just holding down the fort.
That's all we do.
Tony D?
We played Ragnarok before. You missed it.
Did I?
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you. So I follow Ragnarok on Facebook. You know that. I donated money to the guy. That's how much I love Ragnarok Rising. And he's got this trading card game. I don't know anything about those games. You know, like there's a bunch of magic type things. And he keeps going back and forth whether it's going to be a live game or some sort of collector's game. And it's a real heated debate on his Facebook wall. I don't know. I don't know where I stand on that. I got to get some feedback as to what either one of those things means. But we're going to, one day, for 90 minutes, we're just going to play Ragnarok Rising, the playing card game here. And just let the listeners really get to know us as Ragnarok players.
Do I have to come in for that show?
You're going to be sitting right there playing Ragnarok Rising against me and Tone D.
So you said you had a nice gala, star-studded event.
It really was. It was great. Mayor DeStefano is one of the best. He's a really good guy.
Now, you come in all jazzed up. You're a lively guy, period.
Yeah.
I mean, were there libations? What did you do?
Well, I mean, there was a couple cocktails we had. Well, I mean, look like a couple of gentlemen. You sit down, you have a couple cocktails with some dignitaries.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
See, I don't drink like a gentleman.
No, you don't.
I just get involved.
Like, yeah. No, see, I can handle like a nice cocktail with somebody.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you talk about current events. I mean, we're just rapping about various things around the state of Connecticut, and that's what I do.
I'm not impressed.
A lot of people ask me about the show, actually.
Did they?
Absolutely. They said, don't you have the show? I said, my buddy Dan is holding it down. They're talking about hockey anyway, so I'm not going to be, I'm not in a rush. I'll have another cocktail.
Well, you're all wrong. I stuttered for about 10 minutes just talking college football.
You opened the show college football?
Yeah, and I covered the same five things maybe three times.
Did you cover the Vandals? The Vandals got a shot this week?
I mentioned
57-point spread? And you know, you talked about how much you love, like, how you get all jazzed up after Saturday's games. I mean, again, what games on Saturdays were you super – this past Saturday were you super jazzed about, just out of curiosity?
Auburn, Georgia. I watched the Clemson-Georgia Tech game Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
I watched Baylor. Watched the Baylor game.
Yeah.
And I watched the USC-Stanford game.
The USC-Stanford game, I get. I mean, that was a close game. It was very, you know, well, I mean, I get that. There's always a couple games in there.
Auburn-Georgia, I said it tonight, it was one of the best sporting events I've ever seen.
Yeah?
Period. One of the best, forget football, it's one of the best sporting events
now,
I've ever seen in my life.
The play, obviously,
yeah,
everybody talks about. But, I mean, how many times, now, you didn't play much football in high school, but you played enough to know, like, rule number one for a defensive back. And a play like that, knock the ball down.
Yeah. Did you see the Georgia defensive coordinator interview?
No. I mean, it must have, that's something you learn in, like, Pop Warner football.
He literally said, when he was asked what happened, he goes, I don't know what happened.
I mean, the play was covered.
Yeah.
It hit the guy right in the chest.
So you got to
take the ball and throw it on the ground.
Yeah, you got to figure, Mark Riff, the head coach at Georgia, probably makes $3, $4 million a year,
uh-huh,
ballpark. What does that D coordinator make? $750, $800?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Mid,
and you know what he gets paid?
Six figures.
Four? Do you know what he gets paid for? To no answers to questions.
Yeah,
and he had no idea. Do you know what happened? I have no idea what happened.
Nothing.
No.
You tell me.
That's like a Richard Nixon answer.
Yeah, really.
I don't know what happened.
It was probably the dinner I was just at. They probably learned from them.
I don't know what happened.
No.
People should have said, like, could we see your resume to see how exactly
can
you got
this
job?
Can I see some pay stubs? Are you cashing these checks, dude?
I want to tell you another thing.
What else you want to tell me?
Do you know who is a huge fan of me?
Who's that?
Other than everyone? Matt Scully.
Oh, my God. Well, Matt is one of the texts that I received. You know what's funny? You know that he's on the line right now?
No, I didn't.
This guy's got his back to the boards.
I believe we
have the great Matt from Rush. Should I just turn the mic over to you again?
You might as well.
This is such a burgeoning friendship because you guys didn't go off on the right foot.
No.
This is really like a good buddy movie where, like, you put two guys that might not be too similar together, and they, you know what? You learn to find common ground. That's pretty successful. Now, Matty, are you with us, brother?
I am with you guys. Hey, great, great show tonight. Really, it really is. Dan, that interview with Greg Curley, I tell you, that is going to go somewhere. That was a really, really insightful interview. And at one point, Mike, once you hear it, Greg stops in the middle of his answer and says, "Man, you really are a campus fan." So it was just you asked the right questions, you got the right responses, and it came off really, really good.
Mike is crestfallen right now.
Look, I'll be honest with you.
Hey, Dan, Mike's Wally Pipp.
Well, I swear to God, I was just thinking that. I said, I'm Lou Gehrig to his Wally Pipp.
I mean, there's nobody in the world. There's no quarterback in the world that at some point when you go down, they don't, you know, like Drew Bledsoe. You know, it's great. He's got a Super Bowl ring.
Yeah.
But is it really great?
No.
Like, if we all of a sudden tomorrow get a call from ESPN and you get picked up, is that really good for Mike Bo? I mean,
no, it'd be really good for kids in basketball, I'll tell you.
Is that really good for football? God, what can I do over the last, like, 10 minutes of this show to show the fans that I still got something to
offer?
You got to
get Rex Ryan on the phone.
Okay, Matty, do me a favor.
Get Rex Ryan on the phone.
Call up tell him Mike told you, because I'm very close with the PR department over there. Tell him Mike DePalma, Tri-State Sports Guys, would like to talk to Rex tonight. See if you can get him on the horn, all right?
Yeah, I'll be sure to do that. hey, listen, I wanted to say to Dan, I listened to the Francesa interview with Francesa. I keep on calling because Francesa's deli is right here. I always make that mistake. I listened to the Francesa's deli interview with A-Rod today. And did you hear, I mean, I don't know if you can use the word douchey, but how douchey this guy came off. Like, when he was talking about, he says, all I want to do is go and visit my daughters, you know. And now he's using his daughters as a sort of sympathetic figure for him, you know. Then he started talking about when Francesca asked him like 100 times, or like, did you do steroids? Is there nothing? Is there nothing? And he couldn't even answer with any confidence, you know. I just think that this guy is just one of the worst people out there in sports, you know. And, you know, when you're going to come out and you're going to see, just once they Major League's being able to go in and just put out everything, you're going to find out that his people did leak. It did leak the Braun thing. You know, you're going to find out just how what a whip this guy is. And, I mean, we've had this guy, Michael O'Keefe, on, who's been really foretelling with a lot of the evidence that he has seen. You know, so I just think that Francesca put this guy on the spot, and he's going to have to be held to those words.
Yeah, I mean, Maddie, I couldn't agree with you more. When you start bringing in stuff like your daughters, I mean, this guy, you know, he's not married, you know what I'm saying? It's like he's home changing diapers or reading bedtime stories. How much does he see, you know, when he's out carousing with all different women and throwing footballs up, I mean, baseballs up into the crowd and all that. So then you bring something like that, and that comes off as fake. But bringing back to Michael O'Keefe, I mean, one of Michael O'Keefe's points that he made when he was on Francesca's show was, clearly, you're a friend of this guy. And this, if today didn't prove that this guy's a friend, I mean, this guy walked from the courthouse over to WFAN, like, hey, and he just got an open door. Come on in, A-Rod. Like, you know, like,
Mike, did you hear the final line? Did you hear the final line of that interview?
What?
Did you hear the final line of that interview?
No.
Oh, Francesca says to him, hey, why don't you come back? And A-Rod goes, only if we can talk some, you know, the University of Miami football, Hurricane football. And Mike goes, oh, yeah, I'd love to talk some of that Hurricane football. I mean, it was just it's a bromance.
Yeah, why don't they just talk about losing to Duke? You know what I mean? Two blowhard idiots, and they sit and talk about losing to David Cutcliffe's Duke team, which now for the next 2 weeks you have to listen to how good Duke football is. Mike?
Yeah.
I mean, do I have to listen to that because Miami stinks?
Well, yeah, well, that's exactly what's going on here. I mean, at least we're not phony about it. When you're talking to a KU color guy, we're very upfront about it.
You want to know what A-Rod is?
He's
the guy that, like, goes to the park and brings the cute dog, but, like, you know that ad they used to have, but he, like, rented it so that people see how cute he is.
Oh, yeah.
When really he kills puppies.
Yeah.
That's what he is. He's
everything
nothing
about it, yeah.
And I argued before you got here. I said, he's...
Who are you arguing with?
Tony just listens to me. Yeah. I argued he's worse for the game of baseball than Pete Rose and Joe Jackson combined. You can honestly, I could make that argument right now. He's worse than them combined. Because
who's worse, Braun or A-Rod?
Is, and the fact that I have to look at his numbers compared to anyone that I've ever looked up to, that actually it matters. Like, people are going to tell you he's a better player because his stats are more impressive than, like, Brooks Robinson. There's people that think that. You might be one of them. Tony might be. Matt might be. But to me, it's the most ridiculous thing, how you could even count his stats. So
I hate A-Rod. I hate A-Rod. I hate everything about him. I have gone on record on the show, and I have said, if A-Rod gets suspended and he serves a suspension and he comes back playing for the Yankees, I will not root for the Yankees again. And that's a 38-year-old decision right there. You know, I will not root for the fact that this team will have anything to do with this guy. I mean, it's miserable. Did you hear when they were asking him, and his lawyer, where are you going to be on opening day? Where are you going to be on opening day? And he couldn't even answer the thing. Well, I would like to be with the Yankees. You know, it's just like they know the score there.
Yeah.
But Santa, who's the worst person? Ryan Braun or A-Rod?
Who?
Ryan Braun or A-Rod? Who's the worst person?
Oh, to me, they're like the same guy. I can't see any discernible difference in either one of them. I know, like, I even said it before. I said, Mike, Tom Kasuda had posted something on Facebook that he wanted us to talk about the Mets bringing in Cano, Braun, Shin-Soo Chu, or Ellsbury. And my argument was, Braun's a bum. I said it just as feverishly as I'm saying about A-Rod. And I said about those four, and you're the Mets fan, but I said, if I could have any one of those four on the Mets, I would personally rather have Ellsbury, because I can't stand Braun. His numbers mean nothing. Cano's a guy that, do I want him, like, for the young players to go, well, here's how you play. And we've had that disagreement.
Yeah,
mentioned that. To me, Ellsbury's the guy that you get no frills. And I said, Farrell likes him. Francona, even Valentine, who is a scourge of the earth human being, liked Jacoby Ellsbury. Okay?
I would still have, if out of those guys, I mean, if you're not spending $300 million, I think Cano is still the guy you want there.
I said he's better, but...
And I don't know why. I mean, I just love Shin-Soo Chu. I think this guy is a winner. This guy gets on base. You get a guy that has a 400 on-base percentage like he has, finds ways to get in. He just knows how to play the game the right way. Shinsu True. I would love to have him there.
See, I argued against him.
I would have him over at Ellsberg. Ellsberg's never
helped. Really?
Yeah, I really would.
See, I argued against him because of playing the Great American Ballpark. I just felt, I mean,
the
I know
guy,
put
the guy put up numbers
in
Cleveland,
well,
too. And then, I mean, really, when I first fell in love with him.
You'd have him in Ellsberg?
Yeah, I really would. I fell in love with him. I know you're going to make fun of me. I fell in love with him at the World Baseball Classic the last time. We had some big hits. I mean, this guy, I think his game would fit perfectly. And
I hope they get him.
I would love to have
him. And I hope, you know what I hope, and I don't mind it. I have nothing against him. I hope he stinks.
Okay, good. You hope he stinks. Why would you hope he stinks?
Tell me later.
You just don't know a lot about baseball.
I know nothing. I just guess. That's all I do.
You like his name, Jacoby
Ellsberg. I got to go, guys. I want to say one thing. You got to beware of those guys that have won a ring before and that is getting that big contract because they never pan out.
Yeah, no, I agree with you there. I started working on an article that I'm going to try to get up by the end of the week about whether. Go ahead.
No, I'm going to say don't write any more articles. We just got Kendrick Lamar by this article that Santa just wrote.
Yeah, I know. Thanks a lot, Santa.
Yeah, anything that we write after that is like, you know.
Yeah, I know. Well, he's Tony D's favorite rapper. He's very overrated. yeah, I mean, you wrote a great article today, and it's kind of like trumped all of us. And then you come out and have this great show. Just tell me if you don't want to do the show with me anymore. We could just part ways. Maybe I could take the first hour, you could take the back half, or vice versa, whatever you want to do. If it's not going to work out, me and you together, then just let me know. Be up front, dude.
I think it's, you know, I think we should do.
What's that?
We got to get it to where we blast off. We get mics just out the wazoo.
Everywhere. I get mic'd up everywhere. I want a reality show.
You can go relieve yourself, there's a mic.
Yeah.
You go outside, smoke a bowl.
You can find me.
Mic.
Yeah.
Everywhere we go, the fridge to get a beer, mics. And we just, our show will be just epic.
Yeah, could be.
It's epic. But you know what it was tonight? Tony and I talked beforehand. I had a little bit of trepidation. I had to do a lot of talking. You know me personally, I'm not the most talkative guy ever. I just had to do it. I had to step up today.
You really did.
I felt like Jimmy Chitwood in Hoosiers when he said, I'll make it.
And you did.
They wanted to run the picket fence for the other kid.
Yeah.
Jimmy Chitwood goes, give me the ball.
Give me the rock.
That was Jimmy Chitwood.
And very similar to that because I was like, dude, I could call in, help out. You're like, nope.
I mean,
and then when I did call in, you made me sit at home for 40 minutes so you could talk about Kansas basketball and Flyers.
I had to be a man tonight.
You did.
I stepped up. I'm proud of myself.
You took like 6 calls before you got to me.
Yeah.
You knew it was me.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you knew.
I didn't. Tony did.
Tony sure.
I don't know anyone's numbers anymore, but Tony did. Tony, that's my boss. All right.
All right. Well,
let's
hold
talk
on.
To him. Who's he?
Yeah. Let's see what he's got.
Want?
Well, I'll just ask him about Geno Smith. That's all he could offer to the show. All right. So what else do you want to talk about for the rest of the show here? We get some bonus time, Tony?
Yeah, we're good.
Tony?
Figured it out.
Tony D, producer extraordinaire.
Well, I want to give you full opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
To talk. I mean, we just hit up on it a little bit, but I had the opportunity before to talk about it. Tom's question was, those 4 guys, Cano, Braun, Chu, Ellsbury, you already said you'd rather have Cano, Chu?
I'd rather have Cano first and foremost.
And who's next?
Chu.
Really?
Chu, Ellsbury, Braun. I think that Braun is just like the exact type of move that the Mets made in the past. That you just don't want to do. Plus, you're going to have to give something up. It's not like they're just going to give him away at this point. And the fact that they're having discussions, you're going to have to give something up decent to get Ryan Braun. You're not going to get him for a bucket of balls. I don't care how much he's hated over there in Milwaukee right now. Milwaukee can't just continue to be bad. I mean, they spend some money over Milwaukee, even though they're a small market team. They can't just continue to be bad. You're going to have to give something back for him. And so I don't think you touch Ryan Braun right now. I think Cano, you know how much I love Cano, and I don't care about he doesn't hustle. This guy, I don't care about what ballpark he plays in because he's got a great swing. He's not a Granderson that has a lot of home runs due to the ballpark. He's a lot of line drives that go out of that park that'll be doubles, and that's fine. You know what I mean? This guy, he could hit 310 anywhere and do it with, 40, 50 doubles in that ballpark, and that's fine. So I think, and play gold glove second base. So I would take him in a heartbeat. This $300 million number is insane. And what I was about to say was, I was going to write an article about how this offseason could be the death of the gigantic contract, which really came about with A-Rod's first big contract. I mean, there were big contracts, and then it just got ridiculous, and everybody's getting it. And you just look at the laundry list of guys that have gotten big contracts, and very, very, very few of them have lived up to their contract at all. And then it culminates this past postseason with Prince Fielder – looking like he's never played professional baseball before on the base pass, not getting any hits, not driving in any runs. And look at all the money they owed him, you know, throughout the season. You look at Pujols and Hamilton. And so I think that Cano is the test case as to whether, I mean, if the Yankees sign him for the number that they first threw out there, the one, whatever it gets up to, 160, 175, 180 for 6 years, that ballpark, then, yeah, that could, this could be the turning point where it did not become a bidding war and somebody like, you know, Jason Worth didn't get $126 million. Did they say, you know what, let the Yankees pay for him and that's fine, but the teams are not going to just go throw ridiculous numbers at these guys long term.
Yeah, see, I argued against Braun. Number one is I can't stand the guy. Number two, I didn't even think about what you'd have to give up or any, the numbers of it. I just thought about my the thing I said to Tone who was listening. I go, why would you even want that guy around? Why would you even want the media storm that's going to follow a guy like him?
Yeah, as a Jets fan, it's like another Tim Tebow,
yeah,
but,
I mean,
but even worse.
I don't understand any of that. I don't understand you've got a team that you're trying to build. I mentioned you've got guys like Lagares and then Decker, and then to me, a guy like Ellsbury just fits perfectly.
Yeah.
And I have nothing against Chu, and I'm busting your chops about hoping he stinks. I would just love to hear you complain about it later, honestly.
Well, whoever they bring in is going to stink, so that's a moot point.
Yeah, but see, I don't think Ellsbury would, and I mentioned before, I said, if I could have any one of those guys on the Cubs, it would be Ellsbury. And I know Cano is a superior
player. You don't think
he's
just always hurt, though?
I don't even worry about it. To me, we're in the same boat. Both of our teams stink.
Yeah.
You have
they have money to spend, and they stink.
Yeah, I mean, you have your, you know, Harvey, and the Cubs have Samardzija. I mean, so you advantage you guys. The Cubs have a guy like Starlin Castro, mm-hmm. and the Mets have some different young players. You have David Wright.
Yeah,
you got
David Wright. That's what I would answer with
so
that.
So to me, it's like, who would I want to watch play on a team that's maybe going to win 70 games?
Yeah.
And well, I can't stand Cano, as you know.
Yeah.
He seems like a guy you could have a beer with, and he'd be a good dude. To me, it's Ellsbury. He plays the game, and you know we've had this conversation. He plays the game the right way. I'm not saying he's a better player than Robinson Cano. I'm just saying, who would I want to watch of those four?
Yeah.
I'm not going to argue against you with the on-base percentage, but to me, I just think playing in Cincy, I know he put up numbers in Cleveland. I said it before. I don't know. To me, Ellsbury's the guy, because if he does get hurt, I'm going to go, well, they stink anyway.
Yeah.
If you're a Met fan, you can't expect to win this year, can you?
No, but I think you have to expect to start, you know, getting somewhere around 500. You got to expect to be better. I mean, you can't have another 74-win season. So I think this is a season where you need to go out and win games. I just think that's why I like Chu. Now, I'll say this about Ellsbury. We have a mutual friend in Micah Beatty who played some professional baseball. Now he runs Bobby Valentine's Academy down in Stanford, and he went down to spring training last year with Bobby V. And he told me flat out, he goes, the prettiest swing I've ever seen in my life is Jacoby Ellsbury. Prettiest swing I've ever seen, like, in person. I mean, it's just a gore. He goes, this guy, I mean, you know.
Dude, my Uncle Pip said it was Bill Terry.
See?
Now.
So now you
similar players.
Similar players.
I don't know anything about Bill Terry. I just know he had 400 ones. You know what we should get into?
What's that?
Is our debate article.
Yeah, let's get into that.
No one seems to care about. And, I openly admit to not being an NFL guy. But I found it interesting.
Yeah, what did you find interesting on my picks?
We both had the Steelers.
Yeah.
As our top
pick. And I didn't look at yours at all.
Yeah.
Which is why I was pretty surprised. I mean, our order was relatively similar. I mean, the bottom was similar. We both had the Steelers up top. I had the Jets up. I mean, you might have saw my brief little arguments to why the Jets. I just think that they have the ability to beat any team, and they've done it, as opposed to the other teams in that hunt. Haven't really shown the ability to beat a New Orleans Saints or beat a New England Patriots. So when you get on the playoffs, plus the record that the Jets have shown in the playoffs of surprising teams and playing up to the underdog, it's the only reason I really had them. Talent-wise, they're nowhere near. They probably on the bottom half of that. But, yeah, I think the Steelers are just that team that, amazingly, even though they have this national appeal, they are somewhat flying under the radar here after starting 0-4, getting their season going against the Jets. And now sitting at 4-6, and you start looking at those teams in the mix, and you're like, all right, well, they got the tiebreaker against the Jets. You start to see how this thing might shake out. If all of these teams wind up being 8-8, and they could get in by the tiebreaker, can they win? And I think it comes down to a quarterback and a coach, which you always want to have in the playoffs, and they got both of those.
Yeah.
I love Mike Tomlin.
I looked at the, like I said in my article, I think, point differential,
yeah,
quarterback, the hell was my third one? I forget what I even looked at. But I'll tell you what my point is. I started looking at all the teams. I put them down on a piece of paper, and I'm looking 4 wins, 5 wins, and I'm going, You know what the Steelers remind me of is all the stuff, and we talk about not wanting to be phony and be hypocrites and whatever. I said the Steelers, to me, remind me of everything I say about the Giants, where you go, they got the coach. I like Tomlin, too. Used to coach with the Vikes. They got a quarterback who has shown he can win Super Bowls multiple times. And I looked at that and I said, you know, if there's one team, if my team were in the playoffs hosting any one of those nine teams, the Steelers would be the last team I'd ever want to play on that list. Now, you can make arguments for other ones, but I found interesting, too, the 2 5-win clubs, Miami and the Jets, neither one of us had in our top two, I know for sure.
I had the Jets, but...
Where'd you have the Jets?
I had the Jets, too.
Did you have them? I thought you had them third or fourth or something.
No, yeah, I had them, too.
I didn't have them until, like, fourth and fifth, Miami and New York.
Not yeah, I had Miami but... down a little bit, too. I mean, I think that Miami, I mean, they had a nice win this week, which I think helped the Jets, because I do think the Chargers, get them in the playoffs, they have the ability with Phillip Rivers... to win games in the playoffs or win a game in the playoffs, even though he doesn't have a great playoff record. I just think that he's a very, very good quarterback and an underrated quarterback. So I worry about them. So that loss, in my opinion, helped the Jets because now that drops them down to 4-6. The Jets got 2 games against Miami. You look at Miami, I just find them to be a mess. I mean, their offensive line was bad to begin with. They lose. Forget about the off-the-field stuff, and they might try to use that to galvanize the clubhouse a little bit and come together. At the end of the day, Mike Wallace has been a bust. I thought he was a good signing. He's been a bust. He's non-existent in most games. And then you lose 40% of your offensive line. Pouncey was out last week. I'm not overly worried about them, and I don't see them. And I like Tannehill a lot. I don't think Philbin's a bad coach. I just don't see them winning a playoff game.
I found it interesting, too, that we both had Cleveland last,
mm-hmm.
and we both said next to nothing about them.
But what were you going to say about them?
No, I know, but it's just interesting to me that 4 wins in the NFL, regardless of how you got them, I don't even care who you played, really. I really don't. I mean, you look at them and go, how? You had them at 30-1. Mm-hmm. I had them at 40, and all I wrote was 40-1. Why? Because it's Cleveland.
The funny thing is, I put them at 30-1, and I'm like, this is insane. Because I'm thinking to myself, honestly, if somebody would have bet me right now, I bet you Cleveland's going to win a playoff game. What are your odds this year? You know, like right now, like, you know, they have to make the playoffs and then win a game. It'd probably be much worse than 30, but I'm like, I can't lay out more than 30-1. I'm thinking if it was my own money, I would take any one of those bets. If somebody wanted to look at those and want to hit me up, I'll take those bets. The odds that I gave, I would give that to you. If you want to say the Bills, I think I had the Bills at like 15-1 or something. If Tony D says, I want to put $100 on the Bills to win a playoff game this year, have at it, Hoss. And I'll give you 15-1 odds. I don't know what you're going to say.
No.
Now, Tone, you just retweeted. Did you guys talk about this trade?
Yeah.
No, but yeah. I definitely retweeted.
We covered everything.
I mean, I didn't even hear this breaking news. I'm listening to Howard Stern replay on the way home. So you just heard me talking about Prince Fielder, and you didn't want to bring that up?
I didn't even think about it at the time.
Yeah. So
I said, dude, people are saying what a great trade is for the Tigers. That's the stuff I found from these idiots on Facebook.
Yeah.
I said to Tony, I could see Prince Fielder hitting 400 home runs at the ballpark at Arlington. And you know the thing is, I said before, to bring you up to speed, I said the same people in this area that still try to tell me how good Mark Teixeira is or how good Nick Swisher is or A-Rod or whatever are the same people that are going to say Prince Fielder had some stinky playoff games, so he's the worst player ever.
Yeah.
And I don't understand it. I watched the baseball playoffs. I watched Prince Fielder struggle. I've liked Prince Fielder since he was in Milwaukee, which is a lot to say for someone that likes the Cubs.
Yeah.
And I've always liked him. I like the fact that he's not in perfect shape. I like the fact that
he hustles
his tail.
He's pretty quick.
And he plays hard. You know, that diving play when he dove back in the third this year, everybody was killing on him on social media.
Yeah.
I looked at it like, dude, it's a big guy hustling.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
What do you want?
Lot of big guys would just stand up and take the hit. That's what I mean. If it was Robinson Cano and he was starting to get off balance, he would rather get tagged out.
Yeah, I mean,
and look good.
You want him to look like Maury Wills?
I mean,
or like Lou Brock or Vince Coleman or something? He's a big dude.
You know what?
Why does he stink?
One of the things that I had thrown out there on one of the Mets message boards, I didn't put it on our site or anything, but I talked to some of my Met friends. I thought that maybe the Mets can go out and get Elvis Andrews because he had a down year. I thought he'd be good. Mets fans don't seem to be high on Elvis Andrews because he did have a bad down year. But I'm like, this guy plays a good shortstop. He doesn't have any pop, but that's fine. He knows how to handle the bat, and you can get him relatively cheap. And I'm thinking to myself, they want to put Profar at shortstop, and they don't want to get rid of Ian Kinsler. I didn't see this coming at all.
No.
That they would be dealing him like this. I mean, that's a huge trade.
No.
You don't see one-for-one trades like this
I know.
That often.
Somebody from, I think it was the Tribune in Chicago, posted on Twitter last week or something that the Rangers are looking to deal one of those three, Andrus, Profar, or Kinsler. Who would Cubs fans want? That was the poll.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing it, and I'm not a big social media guy, but I looked at it and I said, I would never want Kinsler right now. If I could have any one of those three to put, like, at second, or if they move Castro, whatever they would do. I don't know what they would do. I would want Andrus or Profar.
Yeah.
Because to me, Kinsler, I look at him sometimes and I go, you know, he's got some holes in his swing.
Yeah.
He's not this. I've heard people say he's like this elite second baseman.
Yeah.
And when I watch him play, not that I'm a scout, it doesn't add up to me. So now him for Fielder, like you just said, heads up.
Yeah.
You know, a straight up deal for those two?
You know what? Exactly. You know what I think of Ian Kinsler? And I think he's a product of fantasy baseball. Because for fantasy-wise, or second baseman to put up his power numbers that he puts up and the run productions he puts up, he's like Brandon Phillips, where you're like, this guy's fantastic. Now, neither of those guys are in the same class as like Robinson Cano or Dustin Pedroia as far as just like baseball-wise. But I think that really does skew people's decisions as to why everybody's like, oh, we got to have Ian Kinsler, because in a fantasy baseball draft, this guy goes in the fourth round and those other guys are way down there. But if you want to talk about like actual, like who's going to make your team better, I'm not all that sold on Jurickson Profar. And I wrote an article about him early on the season. This guy has got all of the makings of a, not a bust, but a disappointing guy, because he's been talked about since he was 18 years old. And you look at his minor league numbers, he never put up these gaudy minor league numbers. And then he comes up to the major leagues, and he showed a little glimpses here and there, but he never really he's all about potential. He almost looks like Desmond Jennings, who everybody says is going to be really good. Like, I don't see a lot of guys. I mean, maybe Matt Harvey is the exception as far as a pitcher, where your numbers get precipitously better in the major leagues than they were in the minor leagues. Typically, you see guys, Will Myers pounded the baseball in the minor leagues, came up to the majors and did very well. You know, Yasiel Puig just dominates, he comes up and does well. You know, a guy like Profar, he's just all on speculation, in my opinion, because he never had that just, like, pinnacle season in the minor leagues where you're like, look at this guy, he's hitting 380, and, you know.
I tell you, for me, the biggest head-clearing move I ever made, and we've talked about it, was getting out of fantasy baseball, because I found my thinking became so convoluted for the 5-6 years where I was really into it. Because you do start to look at those things. And I remember hearing about the, I can't think of his name right now, but he was a Korean kid in the minor leagues with the Cubs. He ended up getting moved to Tampa in the Garza deal. And then you see him now.
Iwakuma?
No, I think it might have been Ryu or something like that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
And you see him now, like, he can't even get to the big leagues.
Yeah.
He's like 22 or 3. And sometimes with me, I just, maybe my numbers are wrong in my head. Maybe I'm making it up. You see these middle infielders and you go, when does it always pan out?
Yeah.
Because what do you expect from a middle infielder when he comes up? Do you expect, like, Miguel Tejada numbers when he was hot and doing whatever? Or do you just want a solid middle infielder?
Yeah, you want a Posar and, you know, what
right, or, you know, like, me, I've always been a fan of Darwin Barney, and I see him get trashed, and he had a bad year, and people say bad things about him. But I look at it and go, he plays great defense. He puts the ball in play. He doesn't strike out.
Just like he's a
yeah, I mean, but is that what you're looking for when you talk about a Profar? I don't think that's what they're looking for. I think they're looking for
the
next Derek Jeter or something.
Absolutely.
And to me, it's almost fallacy to think everybody that comes up is going to be this offensive threat at the middle infield positions. And I don't know if you could even say that about Profar, having seen him this past year. I don't know if you can make that argument. Like, is he going to be a 310 hitter? Or is he a 250, 60, 40 hitter who plays really good defense? And is that okay?
Yeah.
I mean, if you add a bat like Fielder, you don't need another bomber. You need a guy who can play defense.
Yeah, right. I just think at this point, the hype around a guy like Jurickson Profar, if he came up and hit 280 with 8 home runs and 20 steals, he would be viewed as a bust. Even though that's a very good. It is ridiculous. But one of the good things about fantasy baseball is you do get you kind of do get a jump on some of these prospects, like in for the Cubs, like you know, Brett Jackson. You know, like, I at least know who he is because of fantasy baseball. I'm following him a little bit. That guy can't hit at the major league level yet. Maybe someday he will, but I know he's like, and who's the other guy you guys got? Soler?
Yeah.
Jorge Soler is his name. Another guy that you, like, you know, you kind of follow. A guy like Dustin Ackley, like, everybody fantasy-wise loved them, so you all watch him, and he was clearly a bust. And now he's going to the minors and come back as an outfielder because that's where he played at North Carolina. So, to me, just as a pure baseball fan, I like to separate myself, and my old co-host, is just, at this point, all about fantasy baseball. Even as a Met fan, he will be so angry if he's got a pitcher. If A.J. Burnett's playing against the Mets and the Mets are scoring runs, it'll, like, devastate his night. And I'll never get like that because I'm always going to be a Met fan. But I also like to try to separate, like, is this guy a good fantasy guy or is he a good ball player? Now, Chu is kind of one of those guys. He could fill up a stat line for fantasy, so I was high on him. I drafted on all three teams I had. But then it forces me to watch this guy, and that's one of the reasons I really like him, and I think his game translates to any ballpark. I actually thought he'd have more home runs because he's got the pop to hit more home runs than he does. But I just think that his game is – I mean, the guy got led the league and get hit by a pitch. He's like one of those type of scrappy guys. That's why I really thought you would like him more because he is like a throwback type player and he doesn't get really brought up in that aspect.
I didn't say I don't like him.
You're just rooting against his success.
I'm just rooting against your enjoyment. No, but my whole thing was comparing him to Ellsbury.
Yeah.
If you gave me the choice between the two of them, I would rather have Ellsbury. Now, if the Cubs sign Ellsbury and he bats 230 for the next 5 years, then I would go, well, what the hell was I thinking? But I'm saying, looking at the two of them as I've seen him play, I've seen a good amount of Chu playing against the Cubs last year. I know he's good. I know he had it, and I said it before even. I go, Mike would know his numbers. Well, I said he had the unbelievable start, right? He was hitting 400 and almost into May or May or whatever the hell he was doing. And then, you know, no one keeps that up unless you're...
He petered
like,
out, but
know.
He's kept his on-base percentage.
No, I know that, but I just said to me, the one guy I'd want would be Ellsbury. And I know that it's not a 100% deal. I know he could get to the Wrigleyville and stink.
Yeah.
It's conceivable. I mean, it happens all the time. You were talking about big contracts before. He's not going to get Cano-type
like
stuff.
He's like
sneaky
old, though, Ellsbury.
No, I know.
Isn't he close to 30 now?
I think he is.
And
but...
you think of Ellsbury, he's like, oh, that guy's 25, 26. He's like, oh, I think he's almost 30 years old.
Yeah, but he went to Oregon State before they were even good.
Oh, well, see, there's
you
the
You know
case.
What I mean?
That's the case.
I remember seeing him in the college
played ball at Oregon State?
Yeah. Before they
you remember seeing him in the
I swear to God, dude. They have the nicest little stadium out there in Corvallis, and I saw him on TV, and it was like, there's this up-and-coming program, and they go to the College World Series. I think they might have won it. And the following year, they went back. And it was like, this is Oregon State. This isn't Fullerton or Texas or FSU or Stanford. And so just following him since then, I mean, he's a guy I love, dude. I said it this year, watching him, Victorino, and Pedroia. It's like, for a guy like me that likes the game played a certain way, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
How could you not like him? I know Chu plays hard.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Braun plays hard. He's just a clown.
Yeah.
He just it means nothing.
Yeah, yeah. And he's a bad dude.
Yeah.
Plus,
he's a Miami Hurricane.
I will tell you
what those guys are like.
So I go to this dinner tonight. It's for, like I said, the retirement of the mayor of City New Haven. I see a guy who's a former controller. Who I used to work with pretty closely. Awesome guy. Mark Petrosimone is a huge Red Sox fan. So every time I would be in meetings with him, we'd always talk baseball before the meetings, after the meetings. And now he's been retired for about 2 years. I haven't seen him. And so I see him from a distance. He's got this gorgeous tan. He's a nice Italian guy. He's probably 6 years old. He's not that old, but he's got a nice tan. His hair's grown out a little bit. And he finds me through this crowd of like 500 people. And he was just like, how about my Sox, baby? Like... And just to see that, and I'm like, that must have – can you imagine being a Red Sox fan and having this season come about? It, for like a Cubs fan or a Met fan, like that's – you could put – and I said to him, like, dude, you know I'm a Met fan. I was pulling for you. And he goes, we have like a tacit agreement where it's okay for Red Sox fans to root for the Mets and for the Mets to root for the Red Sox. I thought, yeah, I get that because we have a mutual enemy here. And so, you know, it was just so awesome to see that. And I put myself in his shoes like I couldn't even – it would be like the Mets. To a little bit of extent. I mean, I know the Red Sox have recent success, but from where they were last year, they're in a worse place than where the Mets are right now. You know what I mean? And for them to come out and have the type of season they had with the group of guys they had, the grinded out type guys they had, the tragedy up in Boston, all of that. I mean, we almost lose sight of that. And I've been saying that, like, the Red Sox story is such a bigger story than people talk about, and nobody wants to talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, you root for the Mets, Jets, Nets.
Yeah.
Kind of a pseudo Rangers fan, whatever.
Yeah.
So you've seen the championship when you were six, and if you count the Rangers in '94,
that was the first time I ever watched. I don't even count. That was the reason I became a quasi Rangers fan because my friends were Rangers fans in high school, and it was like very cool to go watch the games with them.
Well,
so it's like, all right, I like that.
Let me tell you this, and this is true as I've known it in my life. The 08 KU national championship is the only one I even count because '88 is when I really started to love them because everybody said Manning. Couldn't do it, and they couldn't do it, and they did it. I grew so much closer with Kansas basketball in 08, and I was sickeningly tight with it because of that championship. it's amazing what that does for you, because before that they hadn't won since 52 and then 88 and then 08.
Yeah.
So to me, when I see Red Sox fans, especially around here with the litany of Yankee fans getting hated on, I'm happy for them. It has nothing to do with the bombing. It has nothing to do with that. As horrible as I felt and feel for them for that,
yeah,
it's just because they suffered for so long,
yeah,
that I look at them and go, three championships since 04? That's like the coolest thing. I mean, that's got, you got to be, if you love the Red Sox in 2002 and 3 leading up to that 04 World Series, you have to be in like a love affair with them now.
Yeah.
And it's unbreakable as a Kansas fan. Even last year losing to Michigan, I'm like, I still love them.
Yeah.
It broke my heart. But they gave me that championship in 08 as an adult where I could actually like have an adult beverage and watch that game against Memphis. You grow so much closer when all my other teams stink.
Yeah.
It's that cool. So to see a guy, you said he's, what, 60?
Yeah.
To see his socks and his whole life, they fell apart every year.
Yeah, he's a New Haven guy.
Yeah,
like,
and they win three times.
Right. I mean, it's the equivalent of the pimple-faced kid in high school who couldn't get a chick. And then all of a sudden his face clears up, puts some muscle on, and he just starts slaying it in college.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it is, and it's like, it's that much better than the guy who was, you know, has always done well with the girls that gets to college, like, ah, it's cool,
like
I get girls. Yeah, I mean,
it's
similar
ladies
to you.
Yeah.
The ladies felt like you have great facial hair. So, but it's like, you know, it's like that guy.
Yeah.
It's like, you feel so much better for the guy who never, you know, could get a girl, you know, in high school and then gets to college and things clean up and all of a sudden, oh, and you like poetry? Well, chicks dig that or whatever they do, and now you're killing it. That's the Red Sox fan. And so I'm looking at him, I'm thinking to myself, you know, in my life, I don't count any of the championships. The only I got is UConn basketball. I don't count the 86 championship for the Mets because I was 6 years old. I just turned six, and I didn't even stay up to watch the games. I vaguely remember my father being very excited about it, but I was not, you know, by no means can I say, oh, I remember that championship. You know, the closest I've gotten is the Subway Series there, which was kind of like a fog because – I'm surrounded by – I'm in college, so it was fog at the begin with.
Yeah.
And then I'm surrounded by Yankee fan down there, and we kind of knew we couldn't win. You know, you had Benny Agbayani going on there guaranteeing they're going to win in five. It was kind of like a joke, like, you know. And then the Nets, when they had their back-to-back championship runs. But again, it was never a sense – I've never been a fan of one of my teams that is just, like, steamrolling through, like – a Patriots-type franchise where it's just like, oh, my God, this is going to happen. Like, you know, we're the best team in the world. The Yankees, like, we're the team to beat. None of the teams that I root for have been the team to beat.
Yeah. I remember, to give you a little bit more insight than you already have, being surrounded by Yankee fans, I remember one of my dad's best buddies being at his house with my father in that 2000 Subway Series, and they were all Yankee fans, and they were discussing what they would do before game one, if the Mets ever beat the Yankees. And guys were talking about, like, going, I'm going to drink myself to death, or I'm going to do this. And one of my dad's buddies goes, with a dead straight face, he goes, I would have to kill myself. I swear, I could picture him right now. He goes, I would have to kill myself. And I'm not kidding you. I don't think he would have actually done it, but he might have had the razor blade out or something. He might have considered it. That's how much teams like that, like when people say, why do Mets fans dislike the Yankees when they're not even in the same league? Because all they do is win and then rub it in your face. It's like, why does a Cubs fan hate the Cardinals?
Yeah.
Because all the 11 World Series, all they do is win. It's just, I wrote about hating the Packers and their crappy town and their awful cheeseheads and how, what a dump Green Bay must be because they win. You don't trash Detroit unless you're Brandon Marshall, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not going to trash Detroit.
Yeah, exactly.
Those people have been through enough and the team never wins.
Yeah, exactly.
But Green Bay, all they do is win. You just build up hatred.
I got killed on this show a couple years ago because I hate the Patriots. But that, and the first Super Bowl, I was all about the Giants. It was a different type of vibe. That year, the last time they played, the Giants fans just got under my skin to the point where everything that happened, they would have to post on our thing about the Jets.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it has nothing to do with the Giants. Why are you making me hate you so much? And I couldn't take it. I couldn't bring myself, like, in my mind, I'm like, we have to root against the Patriots. How could you root for the Patriots? But I'm like, I can't possibly be around these human beings that are just obnoxious.
Yeah.
And that's how it is. And that's, like you said, some fan bases are like that. Well, Dan, you sounded like you held on the floor pretty well today without me.
I did what I could.
You're gonna do now. I'll do color at the Norwalk McMahon game, and you can just do play-by-play because clearly you've stolen my thunder here.
That's fine.
Which will be fine.
Yeah.
So I'm check in. Us out next week. We're gonna be broadcasting live 10 a.m. on Thanksgiving morning, doing the Norwalk High Brian McMahon football game. We'll have that all set up. It'd be nice. Check us out on TriStateSportsGuys.com, Facebook.com/TriStateSportsGuys, or follow us on Twitter, as always, at @Tristate_Sports. Danny, good job tonight.
Thanks, bud.
All right, we're the Tri-State Sports Guys. See you next week.